Bill Gates just handed us the next chapter of the globalist eugenicist perfect storm playbook on a silver platter.
Water shortages could be the biggest mass mortality event the world has ever seen. I am talking billions of people dying.
What the?
The only way we ensure people remain safe is by being invested in the United States Water Reserve.
Pair that with his well-documented purchases of farmland and water rights across the American West.
You're reporting Bill Gates started buying land in 2013 through a web of limited liability shell companies across the country. Tell us what he's got.
I mean, there is a lot of land, and it's over about 18 different states, right? So we're talking about 70,000 acres in North Louisiana, around the Delta region, 14,000 acres in Florida, over 40,000 acres in Arkansas, over 14,000 acres in Washington. So it really just spans the country, and it is a lot of land. Local farmers I spoke to in South Georgia and North Florida said that he's doing the same thing that Big Ag did before he got there, which is using a lot of fertilizer that leaches into the rivers, causes big algae blooms, and actually is very ruinous for the habitats of manatees and fish.
Plus the exploding thirst of AI data centers that are draining aquifers dry and the pattern snaps into focus. Manufacture the crisis, control the supply, and thin the herd under the banner of saving the planet.
The animals that can eat grass have very unusual stomachs that have these bacteria that are methanogenic in there. And so they leak natural gas, both out the front and the back. And so people have said, well, let's change the hay or throw some things in there. And it's been, nobody knows how to get rid of.
No one knows how to get cows to stop farting.
Exactly.
This is the same oligarch who spent years pushing experimental injections.
If anything kills over 10 million people in the next few decades, it's most likely to be a highly infectious virus.
How ready was the world for this, say on a scale of 1 to 10, and how about the U.S.?
The U.S. gets a low score.
Now positioning himself as the gatekeeper of the one resource no human can live without for more than a few days.
My name is Doug Seavey. I build data centers. I own data centers. I built the first private data center in the state of Iowa. And everything that Google is telling you is BS.
Hi, I'm Ben Townsend. I lead infrastructure strategy and sustainability here at Google. Google's helping foster a new era of technological progress, and we are committed to doing so responsibly. You probably already know that data centers need energy to operate, but you might be surprised to learn that they generate heat and often rely on water for cooling. At Google, we understood early on that as the use of digital services grew, so too would the need for water to cool data centers. That's why we set out to find a responsible, sustainable way to manage this vital resource.
I have a data center right now that's running in Hiawatha, and I have been there 14 years and have never used 1 gallon of water. What Google isn't telling you is they don't want to use the technology because it costs more. They're going to burn through the water, and when it's done, and they don't care. Then they'll put the money in. When I called you and talked to you, and I said, you should really help, let me help you, I never heard anything back. And I warned you. I said, my well goes dry, I'm coming after you because I know what's going on. And you can't do this. You guys have to say no water. They don't have to have it.
UN reports on water bankruptcy and data center consumption provide the scientific cover. While Gates and his fellow Davos acolytes buy the actual aquifers and dictate distribution.
Get off your couch and go protest the nearest data center coming near you, because if you don't, in 10 years, this, it's going to be gone, guys. We need water to live.
Americans still clinging to the idea that these people mean well need to wake the hell up. You can stockpile food, guns, and gold, but without water, you're finished in 72 hours. John Bound reporting for the Alex Jones Network at alexjoneslive.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bigley has launched an online pharmacy, 1776rx.health. It's one product we're launching with, my decision, and that is ivermectin with benzidol, both powerful really good anti-parasitics. It doesn't just get the big worms and all the crap that's out there. It's amoebas, it's microplasms. It is so important. These two together, I mean, ivermectin is a Nobel Prize winning for this. But minbenzidol is the big one. And folks, it isn't just parasites. Just search minbenzidol studies. Just put that into a search engine and you'll see congressional hearings. You'll see top scientists. You'll see all the studies on what else it does that they don't want you to know about. It's dramatic. So, and you won't know if you had any type of parasitical deal or whatever until you've done this. And a lot of people went there yesterday. A lot of people got it. Very smart move. 1776RX.health.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com. Annihilate.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you this Friday afternoon from the Alex Jones Network, alexjoneslive.com. Hope you're doing well. I've been very busy. Been too busy, you might say. Did the debate yesterday with Jordan Chattel or whatever his name is. That was very fun. Hope y'all watched that. I would have let you know you could watch it. I didn't realize it was going to be live. I thought it was going to be pre-taped. So yesterday I didn't tell you where to go to watch it, but you can find it now on Viva Fry's YouTube channel and Rumble channel. I thought it was pretty good. Then earlier today, filmed another Off Limits News episode that'll be coming out on the NXR Studios account on YouTube later today. The second part of our Israeli colonization series, which I may get into a little bit today because I'm speculating and I'm projecting and I'm very suspicious and very conspiratorial in all of this. I think I can tell what's coming next and I want to lay it out. You know, it's a tough job, but I feel like we have an obligation not just to be talking about everything already happening, but to look ahead. Because while I might not have concrete evidence about my suppositions, I think they're still valid. I think they're still valid, and I think that's what conspiracy theorizing is all about. And if we're not going to do it, who is? What I'm talking about is I think the war on terror is transforming before our eyes. And I think we need to be careful about where this is going. And as I'm looking into what Israel is doing in South America and Central America, I can't help but notice the war on terror is slowly morphing into the war on narco-terrorism. And I can't help but notice that there are some extremely coincidental occurrences that seem to keep happening over and over again to one certain country's benefit. I'll lay it out for you. There's a little preview of the video that'll be coming out later today. But you tell me if I'm crazy here. You tell me if I'm the crazy one. We raid Venezuela. We kidnap Maduro. Now, from the very beginning, and if you were watching this program, you know I was not a big fan of this, and I saw it as pretty obviously a precursor to the war in Iran. The bases in Venezuela where Hezbollah was located, getting money for their resistance movement by selling weaponry or black market oil from that country. And just noticing, all right, they're setting the stage here. They're going to go after Iran and they want to make sure that Iran doesn't have allies around the world that can help them. Venezuela would be a primary one. They also want to get their hands on the oil supply because they know they're about to shut down the strait. I mean, it was all kind of obvious, but it's really been like insultingly obvious what the intention of all of this was now. For example, Venezuela did not have diplomatic connections with America or Israel for like 20 years until we overthrew their government, kidnapped their president, and put a puppet in place. And now we have diplomatic connections with them again. And the first congressional contingent to be sent down to Venezuela on an official mission just happened to be Brian Mast and Randy Fine. Brian Mast, the congressman who literally wears his IDF uniform in Congress, and Randy Fine, or as we like to call him, Big Fat Randy Fine, the most despicably pro-Israel congressman out there. I don't think that's a coincidence. I don't think it's a coincidence that our congressional delegation just so happens to be the two most pro-Israel congressmen in the bunch. You didn't, for some reason, nobody with, you know, Venezuelan descent was chosen. No, nobody with, you know, cultural or historical connections to Venezuela. No, it was the two pro-Israel guys. Okay, a little suspicious, you might say. But a few weeks ago, maybe a few months ago, there was a big earthquake in Venezuela. And of course, the Israelis were eager to jump on the opportunity to show some charity to their, you know, newly established friends. And so they sent the IDF home command to help fix up the, you know, earthquake disaster. However, and let's see if the crew can find this article. Search IDF home front Venezuela, and I'll tell you the right one. Because you tell me if I'm seeing too much of this. I need you to let me know. Yeah, that's the one. All right. Full screen it. Scroll down. It's from I-24 News, Israeli outlet. IDF makes home front command history in Venezuela. Israeli officials say the mission's continued presence, even after most international teams have departed, has added significant value to the effort. Okay, so look, far be it from me to cast aspersions on, you know, Israel doing a good deed, sending out these, you know, experts to help clean up the rubble. That's what the home front command does in the IDF. But keep scrolling, and I'll tell you where I start to get a little bit suspicious of what's actually going on. Hold on, go up. You missed it. All right, right here. Approximately 32 Israeli experts are supporting Venezuelan authorities in the transition to the rehabilitation phase, the IDF said, describing it as the longest humanitarian assistance mission in the history of the home front command. Brigadier General Yossi Pinto, commander of the National Search and Rescue Unit and the head of the emergency mission to Venezuela, said the team is currently operating in the area of greatest destruction in La Guaira near Caracas, where the coastline is sustained. But then he says the mission is now in the beginning of its third week. Israeli experts are helping to develop a national situational assessment, supporting decision-making processes, setting priorities, and laying the groundwork for long-term rehabilitation, a phase which would continue for months or even years. The team is working in close cooperation with local authorities who were described as highly receptive to the recommendations and insights being offered. Anybody else a little bit suspicious? Anybody else just a little bit suspicious? I mean, I can understand, like, okay, you know, you've suffered this national tragedy. We're sending our men. We've got soldiers. You know, they're there to clear the rubble. You know, where do we go? Point us to where you want to go. But then something happens where it's like now the IDF home front command is setting up a national situational assessment and setting up processes that will continue for weeks or months as they establish a infrastructure plan. It's like this is suspicious. I don't know about you, but I'd be a little bit suspicious of the friendly Israelis who have been, you know, your mortal enemies until about 6 months ago when they kidnapped your president. But now they just really want to help you and provide all of the help you need. And it's just like, I would kick them out if I were you. I don't think they're there for your interest. And I don't think they need to be directing the nationwide recovery effort for this earthquake, but that's just me. So already I'm looking at this and I'm like, that's a little, I think they're kind of exceeding their mission scope here. I'm a little bit suspicious of the way that it's the Israeli connected congressman being sent down to Venezuela and they're reestablishing diplomatic relationships for the first time. And the IDF home front is there to ostensibly help with the earthquake, but they seem to be expanding the scope of that influence to something much greater. But okay, it's, you know, maybe I'm suspicious. Maybe I'm being a little bit paranoid here. Maybe they're just doing a good deed. Maybe they just love helping their friends. Maybe. Then Colombia, who has not had diplomatic relations with Israel since 2009, suddenly gets a new president who has a rabbi give the invocation at his inauguration, where the rabbi says, "Long live Israel." Okay, again, just it's the type of thing that, you know, think they want you to think is normal. It's not normal. It's very weird. It would be weird to have a German get up and say, "Long live Germany," at the inauguration of the Colombian president. But I guess we're supposed to just accept this as normal. Then they reestablish diplomatic connections, you know, for the first time since 2009. Then Colombia recognizes Israel's sovereignty over the Golan Heights, something that Israel has wanted for a long time, but that, you know, Colombia and none of its neighbors would be willing to do until right now. And that alone is kind of like, all right, you've got these countries who break off diplomatic connections with Israel in 2009 over their abuses of their neighbors and the brutality against the Gazans and all this sort of stuff. And so from 2009 to 2026, they, you know, continue to maintain diplomatic distance from Israel because of their actions against their neighbors. And it's only here in 2026, at the height of the outrages that Israel is committing, at the height of the international outrage about Israel, now they happen to decide, actually, we love Israel now and we want to, you know, confirm their sovereignty over the Golan Heights. That's a little bit suspicious in and of itself. I could imagine, you know, from 2009 to like 2022, first part of 2023, you look around and going, well, you know, in 2009, you guys were being pretty bad, but yeah, it's been a while. Maybe we can reconfigure things here. But for them to now choose to do it right now, that's a little suspicious on the front of it. So on Saturday, the guy is inaugurated. The pro-Israel president of Colombia is inaugurated. On Monday, they have a 7-point-something earthquake that shatters their city. And sure enough, Israel is sending another home front command to help the recovery in Colombia. And this is what I'm asking. Am I seeing connections that aren't there? Are these just coincidences? Maybe. Maybe. Could they be something more? Yeah, I think actually it's something more. Actually, I think it's we're seeing the fruits of the deliberate Israeli diplomatic ventures into South America. Obviously, they're much closer now with Argentina. This is causing protests in Argentina as Milei, the Zionist fanatic, changed the laws of his country to both allow national land that had been burned to be sold and to be sold to foreigners. It's causing a lot of outrage and protest there in Argentina. But also, did you know that Israel has been talking about and putting feelers out there, basically telling Argentina that maybe it's time to go after the Falklands again? So does that remind you of anything? Does that remind you of any other events going on? Let's see, you have a European nation that's not gung-ho about participating in the genocide with Israel. This European nation has territories that it controls across the sea, and now Israel is interacting with the closest nation to the territory, saying, hey, maybe you should claim territory over that European, you know, controlled area. It's Morocco. It's Ceuta. It's Ceuta. It's the exact same thing happening. It's like the exact same playbook. So we see Israel becoming connected in a more close way to Argentina and then saying to Argentina, hey, you know, you actually should have sovereignty over the Falklands. So in the case of both England and Spain, they have these foreign territories that they have that they don't really have problems with. I mean, the Falklands, there was a war fought over it in the 1980s, but Britain won. They own the Falklands, right? I'm not missing that, am I? Just like Ceuta has been a part of Spain for hundreds of years. Not really an issue. It's not really a hot-button diplomatic international geopolitical issue at all until Israel comes in. And in one case, they say to Morocco, hey, you know, you could probably take over. You could probably send a bunch of people into that Spanish land. It should be yours after all. And America backs them up on that. And now you have them doing exactly the same thing in Argentina, apparently trying to either, you know, provide some sort of diplomatic pressure to England or just cause them trouble. I don't really know, because it seems like England's pretty well participating with what's going on in the Middle East. They aren't like Spain, where Spain is very much anti-Israel right now. Maybe they're not as pro-Israel as they should be, but it's this exact same maneuver. Israel goes to Argentina and Morocco and says, hey, you should take that land that's claimed by the European power. Let's create a diplomatic pressure point here so that maybe we can get concessions elsewhere and we'll withdraw our support of Argentina and Morocco taking it over. It's just, I keep seeing these patterns. I keep seeing these things repeat themselves over and over, the same sort of events manifesting in exactly the same ways in exactly the right areas where Israel wants to have greater influence. And I can't help but but be suspicious of all of this. And again, I've been suspicious of all of it the entire time. When we were bombing fishing boats, I said, this is not good. This is not a good precedent to set. And then, of course, you had the seditious six or seditious five or whoever it was, the congressional Democrats, who served the perfect fake opposition, who instead of coming out and saying this is dangerous because Donald Trump is, declaring war without declaring war, he's basically executing people that have never been tried. Instead, they said the soldiers should disobey their orders. And so instead of becoming a question of the ability of the United States president to determine enemies of the state and kill them outright, instead of a discussion about the priority and prerogative of Congress to declare war and the limitations of executive war power, instead of any of that, which, by the way, would have been nice to have a precedent established now that we are 150 days into the non-existent Iranian military exercise conflict that's totally not a war because we totally had a pause after 60 days. That counts. All of this was in preparation of the Iran war, but I think it goes deeper and wider than that. You know, they've taken this idea of the Monroe Doctrine, which had to do with keeping imperial Europeans out of South America and Central America. It now apparently is being extrapolated to mean that we have freedom of action to kill anybody and do anything anywhere in our hemisphere, which again, I'm against because I'm against them doing it here. I'm against, like, what's the difference? So you've got a Nicaraguan guy on a fishing boat or an American guy on the fishing boat. Does the government have a right to just say, we think that guy's a drug smuggler? We think those drugs might get into America, in which case somebody might overdose, in which case we're now saying this fisherman is an enemy combatant trying to kill Americans and we're going to slaughter them with a Hellfire missile. I don't like that precedent being set. I think that's a bad thing. And I think we're seeing the slow encroachment of justification for these militarized actions against people who've never been charged with a crime and aren't a part of a declared militia group or anything like that. I see a lot of problems with this, and I see them being, my worry, I guess you could say, is being expanded as I see Pete Hegseth run around South America and Central America talking about the new way that the war on terror, the quote unquote war on terror, you know, that war on an idea, as a comedian puts it, we're going to war against the consequence of war. But Pete Hegseth is sort of leading the charge on this. Let's go to clip number six, where he's saying, we do bad things to bad people. Pete Hegseth unveils a new motto in the war on drug cartels. So we've now gone from the war on terror to the war on narco-terrorism to the war on drug cartels. But we're not going to war with the Mexican drug cartels, despite them being the biggest and the most powerful and the most immediate impact on America. They're starting with other places first. I just see this all as justification for an expansion of unregulated, uncontained, really undeclared warfare at any point, anywhere in the world. And they're basically setting the table for this. And they're hoping you don't notice because they're doing it against the narco-terrorists. And you wouldn't want to defend the narco-terrorists. Well, you're not on the side of the narco-terrorists, are you? So I guess you have to approve of the United States government deciding it can kill whoever it wants, wherever it wants, by claiming they're narco-terrorists. Let's go to clip number six. Here's Pete Hegseth laying it out.
That's why today we launched the motto of the ACCC, which is we do bad things to bad people. Because for too long, bad people did bad things to good people inside the United States of America and across Central and South America. And we're going to empower great Americans and great partners to do really good stuff and be very capable about bringing violence against drug cartels and designated terrorist organizations, because we're dead serious about securing the homeland.
You know, we have terrorists here, right? They're called the left. They're called Antifa, DSA. I don't believe them. In a word, I just don't believe them. I think if they were really concerned about securing the homeland, there's a lot of stuff they could be doing here. I don't think that we're bombing Nicaraguan fishermen to protect the homeland. I just don't buy it. I don't think we went after Venezuela to protect the homeland. I think that was in service of Israel. And I think that what's happening now is all in a way, in service to Israel, or rather in service to the New World Order, global government, corporate monstrosity that will be headquartered in Israel. And it really seems to me like right now they are setting the table and they're just sort of doing it. They're just sort of morphing the war on terror into the war on narco-terrorism, justifying it under the claim of national security, when in reality it's all about just normalizing the idea that the American government is at war all the time against anybody who disobeys them. They can just call them terrorists, call them drug traffickers, don't actually need evidence because you're just slaughtering them and it's warfare. So I just don't buy it. But they're, you know, right now they're reorganizing the entire like hemispheric command. It is now, you know, it was the, you know, South American CENTCOM. Now it's the CENTCOM of the Western Hemisphere, but they're reorganizing and, you know, redistributing the entire military to essentially be a permanent police force across the entire hemisphere, both continents. And again, I see, you know, other things moving in that direction here in America that worry me quite a bit. And I would like to see some clarification as to what this new, like, it, you know, the war on drugs used to just be the thing they called it when police would arrest you for having marijuana. And I was always against the war on drugs. It's kind of a whole different thing when they're like, it's an actual war and they're actually killing people that they're claiming are drug runners in other countries. Can they do that here? Is there any difference between them doing it on American soil and foreign soil? Again, if this was Obama doing it, do you think conservatives would be as blasé about the developments that are occurring? Do you think maybe by doing this under Donald Trump, they've had us lower all of our defenses, so we're not looking for the building blocks being established right now that will soon be handed over to the Democrats so they can do with it what they will? I think I'm very concerned about what I see coming down the pipe. And again, it all goes back to that article that I read earlier this week, which was about Donald Trump removing the guardrails to tyranny and saying that before, you know, I would have just rolled my eyes at that because Donald Trump is, if anything, too adherent to the laws or the orders from judges and this sort of, he refuses to in any way even challenge the limitations or barriers that are seemingly set up around his ability to do anything. So it's just kind of ridiculous, but now I'm seeing it. I'm seeing a lot more of it. I'm seeing the way that whether it's, you know, stripping people of their citizenship, it's like this isn't being done for us. He's not removing the guardrails so he can crack down on the left without any limitations. He's not cracking down on the left. They're not deporting illegal immigrants. We're apparently declaring war on drug runners in Nicaragua while our country is being torn apart by the inside by a bunch of hostile foreigners. They're setting up ICE to be a federal, you know, anonymous kidnapping group, which I like them doing that when it's illegal immigrants, but where is the barrier and where is the limitation? And can they not be deployed against the American people if, say, another Democrat gets in charge and wants to do another lockdown COVID style, or wants to claim that a protest was actually terrorism and arrest everybody who participated, like January 6th? Would he not then be able to use Flock and all this stuff and call us terrorists and treat us like the narcotics runners?
Tell you something right now that is one of the most, if not the most important things I've ever talked about on air, and I want you to really listen to me, and I want you to get a pen and paper out of your iPhone, out of your Droid, and type this into your notes, and I want you at lunch today or tonight or right now to just go to any search engine you want and type in two different names, two different words, okay? Two different drugs that have won Nobel Prizes, you name it, that people don't want you to know about. And one of those is ivermectin that everybody knows about. The other one that most people still don't know about is mebendazole. If you do the research, then it's important to understand that you need to get it from a pharmacy. You need to get it from a doctor. And we have a sponsor, and that's, of course, Bigly. And they went and they used the same service as, you know, the big web, RXs, and great people we've used that have been sponsors in the past. But this is Bigly doing it. And the key is, it's real, it's pharmaceutical, and it is a very low price. People are selling knockoffs of it online without a prescription, and a lot of it's fake, or a lot of it's watered down and adulterated. Because I did a regimen a couple years ago of mebendazole. We'll put that on screen. That's how you spell it right there. MEBENDAZOLE. And it didn't have any effect. I bought it off of Amazon. And then I did more research. And they said most of that stuff's fake. So I went and I got it from a doctor. And it was incredible. And my own medical doctor owns clinics all over the state of Texas had already been pushing it on me for years. And I just never done it. Ladies and gentlemen, you can get the two in a combo. The ivermectin and the mebendazole together. And they work synergistically together. It is certified and known, both of them, as incredible anti-parasite. Just search the term ivermectin, mebendazole, and just put in study and do your own research and see what the system has been suppressing about this. And this is something, in my view, talk to your physician. And when you go to the website, it's, you know, online pharmacy, and they've got nurses, doctors, all of it. And then you get the prescription. It's very, very easy to do. And I would recommend to talk to your doctors. My own personal opinion. What I do for myself is twice a year, I take a regimen of ivermectin and mebendazole. And it is incredible. People ask why I look so young while I'm healthy. Well, it's a cocktail of things. It's the ivermectin. It's the mebendazole that I take about twice a year as a regimen. Some people, my medical doctor says, take a little bit of ivermectin every week. But I tend to forget to do that. She's literally just says take like two pills a week as a supplemental. That's what my medical doctor tells me. You get your own medical doctor to tell you what you want. But the big thing they say is a couple times a year, a big dose, a big regimen. You talk to your physicians. You talk to the folks in the online pharmacy. Let me put it on screen for you. 1776RX, just 1776RX.health. This is one of the most important things you'll ever do, ladies and gentlemen. And despite the system trying to suppress this information, it's getting out everywhere. So do your own research. This is revolutionary. This is so important. 1776, just the numbers. 1776RX.health. Those are the coordinates, and it's a win-win to fund our operation and what we're doing. Take action now. The most important decision you'll ever make, 1776RX.health, and get your ivermectin, mebendazole right now, ladies and gentlemen. But whatever you do, go to the AlexShowStore.com. These are incredible products. All these things work. They have sexy names. Irish Sea Moss, Shilajit, bovine colostrum. Oh, research bovine colostrum and then find out we have the best. Oh, research Irish Sea Moss. We have the best. Research Shilajit. We have the best. We just bring you things the bad guys don't want you to know about at TheAlexShowStore.com and, of course, at 1776RX.health. Take action now. Thank you so much for your support.
Welcome back, folks. This is the War Room, AlexJonesLive.com. You know, I watched pretty much the entire debate between Andrew Wilson and Candace Owens. It's like all anybody's talking about on X right now. Total waste of time. If you want my honest, total waste of time. Nothing of value was learned. Nobody was convinced of anything. And my hope in the human race is at an all-time low. I'm only a little bit joking. But I genuinely don't even understand what is going through people's minds half the time. I mean, I talked about it before on the interview with Brandon Straka, the debate between Stu Peters and Andrew Wilson last week, where they're both like afraid to make claims. Like nobody will just make the claim. Like the whole thing is just so bizarre to me that it's like these guys just like, well, you make the claim. Well, I never made a claim. I don't have to make a claim. Well, the burden is on you to make a claim. Well, why would I make a claim? You're trying to make me make claims when really you're the one who's making claims. I'm here to debate your claims. So I'll make a claim as soon as I get a clarification on your claim. And it's just like, can somebody say what the hell they believe? Can you just say what you think is happening? I don't get it. I feel like, whatever. It's just, I'm not really going to talk about it. I don't have clips from it. There's nothing of value there. Nothing actually was discussed in any way that could convince people one way or the other. And Candace Owens is like hyper defensive and won't stand by anything that she's ever said and is just constantly acting like she's being put on the back foot. And it's just like, can you just discuss the thing you think happened? Can you just say what you believe? And if your mind has changed, then say why it's changed. But it's all of this, like, you're telling me I'm not allowed to infer something. I can infer whatever I want. And it's just like, what do you think happened? Can you tell me what you think happened? And the crazy thing is, I think there's good arguments on both sides, and nobody is making them, and nobody made them, and there's no just getting your hands around what's actually going on. Like, for example, I don't know if the crew can find the video, probably not in this short amount of time, but I didn't watch all of the Tyler Robinson stuff. It was 9 hours a day for multiple days. I did not watch all of it. I only watched a little bit of it. But even in that little bit that I watched, there are some very glaring questions as to the evidence that was presented. There's one case where they have the woman on the stand who is the woman in the local police department who found this pile of suspicious objects. And it's like a backpack and a ski mask and gloves and a black sweater. And it's all stuff that seems to correspond with what we saw the shooter wearing. And it was found at a bus stop en route that the shooter took after he fired the shot, jumped off the roof, ran a direction. They know where he ran, and they know on the path that he was running, there was a pile of discarded material, including the glove and the whatever else. I can't remember if there was a ski mask, but I think there was. I know there was a backpack and gloves and a few other things. And while this lady's on the stand, the lawyer is questioning her, and they say, you know, so you sent these objects in to the FBI for DNA testing, right? She said, yes, I did. And then the lawyer says, the FBI says that you then later, you know, got in touch with them and said, you don't need to test that stuff. That's unnecessary. And the woman's like, no, I never said that. Like, she responds, she's like, no, I never made that call. And the lawyer woman goes, oh, okay, but that wouldn't be inconsistent with what you think happened. And the woman's like, no, that wouldn't be inconsistent. And it's like, well, hold on. That's kind of a glaring inconsistency, actually. Actually, I'd like some clarification on that. So the FBI says that they never tested it because they were instructed not to test it by this woman. The woman, when asked, said she had no memory of ever contacting the FBI to say that. But then she's asked, but if the FBI says that's what happened, is that inconsistent with your memory? And she's like, no, that's not inconsistent. It's like, yes, it is. No, it is inconsistent. You just told us you had no memory of doing that. But then it's like rephrased in a way that it's like, so are you objecting to them saying that? And she's like, I'm not objecting. It's like, okay, so that, and it's like, okay, well, hold on. Why did the FBI say that? Who did tell them? Do they have this in writing? Did they get rid of this stuff? Why did they say it wasn't going to be tested? It's this type of stuff that it's like, can we get some clarification on that? And I've talked about this before with Candace, where it's like, I'll be watching a show and she's bringing up all this stuff about videos of bald guys and cars and Chick-fil-A and steakhouses and da 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 da. And it's like in the middle of it, she's like, and, you know, they found the gun in this wooded area. The police had searched that wooded area multiple times, and it was only after the FBI arrived, they immediately found the gun. And then she just moves on. And it's like, hold on. Why are you saying all, I just had to listen to a 10-minute montage about nonsense that doesn't matter and means nothing and is connected to nothing and proves nothing. And then in the midst of all of this, you just like drop a bombshell that actually matters, that actually would be something to cause concern, that would actually be something to look into. And you just move on. You go back to the things about the bald guy in the car. And it's like, this is what I don't understand. How do you not understand how to present this information in a way that is legible and understandable and comprehensible? So then you can make the argument on that. It's madness that we can't just have an adult conversation about this stuff. And I guess this was the opportunity, and they failed. They failed to make a single point about anything. It was all just ego protection the entire time, and snide remarks and snark, and just weird. It's just weird. The whole thing is very, very weird. There's some very significant questions, but God help us, Candace Owens is incapable of actually presenting them in a way that is compelling. And for some reason, nobody at TPUSA can figure out how to deal with her handler. It's baffling. Baffling, truly. That's my review of the debate between Candace Owens and, Candace Owens and Andrew Wilson is just like, you can skip it. You can pretty much skip it. There's nothing new, nothing. There was nothing really. Total waste of time. We could grab clip. I'm sure people want me to talk about it. I'm sure people want to talk about it. I'll open up phone calls in the next hour if you want to call in about it. You're more than welcome. You think I'm an idiot for not seeing the genius of one side or the other, you know, whatever. Yeah, we'll open the phone lines now. 512-266-0642. 512-266-0642. You know, I've been wanting to do this a little bit. Should probably talk to the crew about it, not on air. But, you know, typically how we do it is we'll open up the phone lines, take a couple minutes to let the, you know, first like 6 or 10 people call in, and then we just sort of go through that list. But I would kind of like, I think there's a way to do it where we just have the phone lines open the whole show, and just anybody with a pertinent topic or a pertinent comment on whatever topic we're covering at that time. So we just sort of constantly have people coming in and out. I'd like it to be more of a conversation. I don't know. I'd like to work that out somehow, but I don't know how easy that will be, because I know the crew's busy anyway. But if you want to call in, the number to dial, 512-266-0642. If you watch the debate and thought one side won or the other side won, or agree with me that the whole thing was an exercise in futility, whatever your opinion, give us a call, 512-266-0642, and we will start going to those calls as soon as they're coming in, and we'll go to them periodically here throughout the show. But yeah, I watched the whole thing, and it's just like, what are we even doing here? This is total nonsense. There's a lot of actual things happening and actual news to get to, and I don't know what to make of J.D. Vance. I really genuinely don't know what to make of J.D. Vance, because I'm perfectly aware of his suspicious connections. I'm willing to be convinced one way or the other that, you know, he's the real deal, and just because he got patronage from Peter Thiel doesn't mean he's not who he says he is. I'm also open to the idea that he's just a very sophisticated psyop. I don't know. I genuinely don't know. All I can go on is what I see him say and what I see him do. And as far as I'm concerned, J.D. Vance is the only Republican in public life that correctly addresses the concerns of socialism. He's the only one. He's the only one that seems to get this. He's the only one that says this stuff. He's the only one who has a shred of common sense when it comes to dealing with the rising tide of democratic socialists in this country. Clip number 9, here's VP J.D. Vance warning his fellow Republicans that they're on the wrong track. They actually want to stop socialism. Let's watch.
And my warning to my fellow Republicans, Will, would be, if we don't get this right, don't blame young people for being sympathetic to socialism. We've got to blame ourselves. And I think what is so unique and refreshing about Donald Trump's economic policies is that it's not the same old economic, you know, ideas that you would have heard 30, 40 years ago. He's talking about rebuilding our industrial base, rebuilding the heartland, making our streets safer, making it possible for young people to afford to buy a home. This is how you stop socialism. You don't stop socialism by throwing slogans at people about the free market. As much as I love the free market, you stop socialism by making people's lives better. And that's what we're trying to do every single day.
So, you know, I think he's right to pitch this. He's right to, phrase it like this. He's right that they do need, you know, to put up a fight and actually make the argument as to why our side is better and socialism is not necessary and, in fact, evil. I agree with all that. The problem is everything compounds. All of the mistakes or attacks, depending on where you're coming from, compound upon one another. So, how do you expect to make intellectual arguments and be able to actually have young people contend with the ideas, which are complicated, are not simple, they're not, elementary level ideas, the conflict between socialism and capitalism and where the right divide is. I mean, you know, you got to be kind of intelligent to talk about this stuff. So it's probably an issue that we've utterly destroyed all standards in education up to this point, that we're graduating people who literally cannot read the English language. and that half of our country can't read at a sixth grade level, this makes it impossible to run a country with all these stupid people. And the reason that we've had to lower the grades is because the gap of achievement between the races was determined to be racism, and so therefore failing a black kid was an act of oppression. So you had to get rid of grades. And of course, the reason that kids can't read now is because half of the kids in elementary school, middle school, or high school at this point are foreigners who do not speak English. Because remember, literacy is not just about being able to sound out the words and read a word by knowing what the letters sound like. Literacy is about being able to read a passage and then understand and like regurgitate what it said, to be able to comprehend what you're reading fully, not just read the words. So all of these things compound, you understand? And like the issues that we're dealing with now of the rise in socialism are themselves an outgrowth of the crap we've done to diversify our country over the last several years, which it's like maybe it should have been stopped then. And I feel like kind of everything is like this, right? If you look at COVID and you go, all right, people are voting for socialists now because they're upset about the economy. The economy is bad because we have massive inflation. We have massive inflation because the government printed a bunch of extra money. The government printed a bunch of extra money because they had to make up for the time when they shut down the economy. They shut down the economy because of COVID. COVID was made in a lab and released on purpose, by the way. So it's like all of these things compound on one another. And it's not the sole reason that people are going over to socialism is just because the virus was created. But all of these things compound. All of them add on top of one another. And we saw all of this from all the way back in 2020 when we were going, do not shut down the economy. Here's what's going to happen next. If you shut down the economy, you're going to have to print money. That's going to cause inflation. This was obvious the whole time. So again, there's something so frustrating about like, because you didn't listen to us about COVID, you locked down the country. Because you didn't listen to us about the lockdowns of the country, you allowed mail-in ballots to rob you of the election. You allowed the economy to be shut down and all this money to be printed. Because you didn't listen to us about the lockdown and the COVID and the printing of the money and the diversity and the, you know, getting rid of standards in education, you got a bunch of dumbass young adults that don't understand that socialism is bad, are in a bad economic situation, and can't be actually reasoned with because they've been trained by the woke mind virus to treat any sort of, you know, intellectual difference as an enemy-friend distinction and to never give any credence to anything that your enemies say. Again, this has like been deliberately established in their minds as the correct, you know, way to think about things. So it all builds on one another. And I don't know how people don't see this and can't understand that in part these are why these things were done in the first place. You know, now they'll admit that it was not a good idea to lock down the economy. Well, why did we lock it down at the time? Because the argument was better safe than sorry. It was a gamble. And it was like, okay, if we stay open, there's a potential that this disease kills every, you know, half the people it infects. And by keeping the economy open, you're talking about 100 million deaths, okay? Whereas on the other hand, we lock down the economy. You know, if we're wrong, all right, there's a little bit of an economic, you know, disruption, but, you know, it's not the worst thing. Whereas if we were wrong about how dangerous it was and we stayed open, millions of people would die, that would be the worst. So that was the argument made. Here's the problem. We've got Anthony Fauci's diary where at the time they acknowledged that the disease was not deadly, that it was a tenth as deadly as the flu, whatever it was. So when you make the argument that it was better safe than sorry, we didn't have the knowledge, we didn't know, we were just playing it safe because the alternative could have been catastrophic, that's a lie. That's a lie because they knew it wasn't dangerous. They lied to us about how dangerous it was in order to lock us down on purpose. So the lockdown, one thing we absolutely know for sure was that it was not based on health. We know that. So what was it based on? Why did they lock us down? Probably exactly because they wanted the economic disruption to consolidate power in the upper crust to shut down the small businesses, to print all the extra money, to cause the inflation, to cause the economic strife, to make the argument for socialists, to turn America into a communist country. And again, you know, a lot of stuff is still coming out about the COVID vaccine, all just confirmation of what we've known forever. And all of it is this same type of thing where what was done was so egregious, mass murder, mass disruption of the economic system, causing God only knows how many downstream negative effects in health and mental health and just everything. All of it predicated knowingly upon lies. And this might be the most heartbreaking and egregious case. The COVID vaccine has increased miscarriages. But of course, this article, and now this is, back in the news, right? Because you've got former CDC director saying it was a mistake to recommend COVID vaccines to pregnant women. But it wasn't a mistake. I'm trying to figure out like a metaphor or something to explain this, but the fact is, the entire time InfoWars was on the air, screaming into the void, this is bad. This is bad for pregnant women. This is not safe. They should not be pushing this. It's not only unnecessary, it's actually negative. It'll actually damage the health of the American people. So you can't claim ignorance. These people cannot claim ignorance. They cannot claim that it was a mistake. Just like if you wanted to go do something and I was sitting here going, don't do that. Here's the consequence of you doing that. If you do that, here's how bad it's going to get. Don't do it. And you look me in the eye and go, shut up, and then do it anyway. You can't go, well, that was a mistake. I was mistaken. No, you did it on purpose. You knew the consequences. You did it on purpose. It wasn't a mistake. None of this stuff was a mistake. It wasn't accidentally released from the lab. They didn't accidentally shut down the country. They didn't accidentally tell pregnant women to get this when it wasn't safe. That's an absurd argument to make because we were on air every single day saying the truth, knowing the reality. You're telling me that somehow we, InfoWars, your friend Harrison hanging out in a studio in Austin, I somehow knew more than the director of the CDC? No. It wasn't a mistake. It was an attack. And it's frustrating that we can't get justice for this mass murder attack. It's crazy. Speaking to News Nation's Katie Pavlik tonight, Redfield, who served as CDC director from March 2018 to January 2021, condemned the recommendations, calling them, quote, errors in judgment. I never thought we should vaccinate pregnant women. I was not in favor of that policy recommendation because the COVID vaccine did not prevent infection, Redfield told the show host earlier this week. So the argument that some people had that you had to vaccinate pregnant women to protect the unborn baby because it would protect mommy from getting infected, that was not a true statement because it doesn't prevent infection. But they knew that it didn't prevent infection because we knew it didn't prevent infection. So again, how are you saying this was a mistake in judgment when really what you're saying is they knew the consequences, they knew the risks, and they did it anyway? That's not a mistake. And like, do we really need the CDC director to say this? Do we really need Anthony Fauci's Dear Diary entry about this? Or can we just look at the chart from VAERS? From OFIN-VAERS, and we've shown this chart many times on the show. These are the miscarriages and stillbirths reports to VAERS, the Vaccine Injury Reporting Hotline. Do you see any inconsistencies? Do you see a jump? Try if you can, you know, delve into your psyche and see if you can't recognize a pattern here and where the pattern is disrupted. It's this type of stuff. So I remember talking about this with the election in 2022, that the sort of F-shaped jump in the vote tally, how they're counting the vote and the two lines are going up kind of together and then one just goes boop and then it keeps going. And you just look at that. And like you could present that chart, no labels, no nothing, just the shape. And you could present that and go, where's the anomaly? Where's the anomaly? And anybody who's unbiased, who doesn't know what you're talking about, who's never seen the chart before, would have no problem going, there's the anomaly right there. Show it to a person who's been propagandized, who's on the other side for some reason. You show them that chart and they're like, I don't see it. I don't know what would be strange about this. You can show them the OpenVares chart and they go, well, I don't think this proves anything. I don't see anything strange about this. Of course, you're going to have more reports when a new vaccine comes out. That's probably typical. Like, they're just able to be blind to reality. And it's really amazing. Because you don't need to be biased. You don't need information from me. You don't need, like, to read a book that I offer you and watch the shows that I recommend you to come to the same conclusion as me. All you need is a brain and pattern recognition and honesty, and then you'll come to the exact same conclusions. But for the left, they need to be trained to not see certain patterns, to not notice certain obvious things happening, or to forget that at the time that this side was lying to you, this side was telling you the truth. Because again, as we saw with people like Scott Adams finally, you know, eventually admitted that the anti-vaxxers were right. But even then, the way that he admitted it was, he said, you were right to just be sort of petulantly opposed to everything, and whatever the powers that be said, you believed the opposite and you were right to do that. And it's like, that was never the case. It was never the case. We never just, you know, whatever the officials say, we believe the opposite, whatever it is. That's not how this works. We looked at the facts and we came to conclusions. We were right. They were lying. They're the ones you have to come up with a psychological explanation for why they would do that. You don't have to come up with a psychological explanation for us being right about something. And it wasn't just because we were, you know, petulantly saying the opposite of whatever the official said. But I think if anything, probably the greatest thing I've ever done in my life is help to prevent some people out there from not getting the vaccine. I don't know what impact I had. I don't know who was listening to me versus others, but the entire time we were screaming from the rooftops the reality about the vaccine. And if some of you listened, then, you know, we likely saved your life. And that's why we do it. We need to do it more. So I hope you can support us by going to thealexjonesstore.com. This is your last day. You only have a couple more hours to make a purchase at thealexjonesstore.com and be entered to win both trucks that are being offered for the raffle right now. Two incredible super-powered trucks. You can win one or both. But you've only got a few more hours. Go to thealexjonesstore.com and get two times the entries to potentially win both those trucks and the $20,000 in cash. Thealexjonesstore.com.
Dirty, dark, dastardly villain is after the methylene blue formula.
Feast your eyes on the magical methylene blue. Don't wait. Get yours today while supplies last.
Come on now, Bandit. We gotta get this truck on the road.
We gonna do what they say can't be done.
Let's get a move on.
We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm eastbound and run on bandit run. Keep your foot hard on the pedal. Some devil mind your brakes. Let it all hang out, cause we got a run to make. The boys are thirsty in Atlanta and there's beer in Texarkana. We'll bring it back no matter what it takes. Eastbound and down. We gonna do what they say can't be done. We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm eastbound, just watch old bandit run.
If you are
receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, folks. Second hour of The War Room, AlexJonesLive.com. There's a phenomenon we've been covering for a while called diversity ad nauseum. So much diversity, it makes you sick. They call the police racist. Now crime exploded. A couple years ago, they decided grades were racist and a barrier to achievement, so they got rid of grades. How is that going? Well, let's find out.
I was teacher of the year at John F. Kennedy Middle School in Antioch this past year, and Blue Ribbon Teacher of the Year for the district. What you have in front of you right now is my resignation letter. I resigned in May. You can read those three pages at your leisure, but I've heard a lot of positive data in this meeting, and I just wanted to give you some facts from my firsthand experience. So first, district leaders asked me to fabricate grades for a parent who sat in the office for hours until her daughter's failing grades were changed. It creates false entitlement. What happens when these kids lie, cheat, and cry their way through school and end up as future doctors, police, or politicians? When will you protect the future of our society? Second, that same parent has harassed over 30 teachers. Teachers have filed police reports, and entire school districts have had, or entire schools have had restraining orders against her. Yet she's still allowed on school property, showing up to field trips her child didn't earn, and filming other students. When will you stop prioritizing parents' feelings over the safety of our teachers and our students? I heard you also mention that we're closing gaps in teacher vacancies. I want the public to know that many of those are filled with uncertified teachers. My third point, HR withheld money from my employee paycheck as well as many others. They took $500 from me specifically, and it put me behind on my mortgage. And then they sent out an email saying that they had to do it to pay other employees. When will you pay teachers what they are owed? My fourth point, the news reports that behavioral issues are down. They are not. We are simply banned from reporting them, forcing us to keep disruptive students in the classroom. Statistics are being skewed to protect the district, not our children. Our children cannot read and write. They cannot do basic math. And we spend 40 hours a week with these students, so we know them better than the district and those fake numbers. Please stop undermining our professional decisions because, honestly, it's breaking the efficiency and it's giving HOA quality. So, Dr. Battle, my question to you.
Thank you.
Okay.
I literally broke down in the middle of class because I'm teaching seniors. These kids are leaving high school and going to college, hopefully, after they finish. We had two paragraphs to read, one sentence complete to write. I gave them the sentence stems. I basically completed the sentence for them in the model. These are 17 an 18-year-old kid, and they couldn't fill in four words. Four words. I gave them the scenario. We annotated together. I gave them the answers before we even had the problem. And they couldn't do it. I don't know. I simply don't know where the problem is. This is only day two. And I have seniors who simply cannot read and seniors who cannot write. They cannot write. They can reason. They have the ability to defend their reasoning if it's talking to their homeboy, but applying that to a written text, two paragraphs, and they couldn't do it.
Sounds like you're a racist, dude. Sounds like we got a racist teacher over here applying, you know, white standards to non-whites. That's racist, sir. It's racist to want people to be able to read. It's racist to have standards. Get over.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bigley has launched an online pharmacy, 1776rx.health. It's one product we're launching with, my decision, and that is ivermectin with benzidol, both powerful, really good anti-parasitics. It doesn't just get the big worms and all the crap that's out there. It's amoebas, it's microplasms. It is so important. These two together, I mean, ivermectin is a Nobel Prize winning for this, but benzidol is the big one. And folks, it isn't just parasites. Just search benzidol studies. Just put that into a search engine and you'll see congressional hearings. You'll see top scientists. You'll see all the studies on what else it does that they don't want you to know about. It's dramatic. So, and you won't know if you had any type of parasitical deal or whatever until you've done this. And a lot of people went there yesterday. A lot of people got it. Very smart move. 1776rx.health.
Welcome back, folks. Not sure what everybody was expecting the results to be. Not exactly surprised that nobody in our schools can read anymore. It's one of these things. Just one of these things, you know. I pointed the hose at my face and turned it on and I got wet. What? That's crazy. You're telling me that getting rid of standards and passing every single student regardless of grades has backfired? What? No way. You're telling me that having to spend half of your school's budget on translators because your entire school population is filled with foreigners that don't speak English, and now the American students are suffering as a consequence? What? No way. No way. Do you understand? Like, that's literally what we're literally dealing with, people going, we stopped giving kids grades and now they can't read. What has happened? Well, you stopped giving them grades. You stopped making sure they're actually learning anything. What are you talking about? Of course, the real absurdity is like, but we gave them all Chromebooks. We made every kid go home and live in their room for a year, and we gave them a Chromebook so they could chat with their friends and watch pornography, and for some reason, none of them can read now. Maybe we should give them another Chromebook. You know? Maybe we should stop testing them for reading. Then you won't have the failing grades anymore. It's like that video of the guy saying, yeah, you lower crime by not charging crime or by legalizing the things that are crimes. This is just the mindset of our world at this point. Oh, these kids are failing. Stop taking grades. Problem solved. Okay, great. We'll see how that turns out down the road. It's going to turn out by our not being able to keep our lights on anymore. Like South Africa, we're going to have to give up our nuclear program because we can't handle it safely anymore. And we're going to import a bunch of Indians who, by the way, also didn't pass their classes, but paid money to get a degree. So we're not training our kids. We're allowing our kids to wallow in failure and misery and achieve nothing and not even know how to read. Meanwhile, we're replacing them with barely educated foreigners who also can't read English. Just not the type of actions anybody who wanted something good for America would be engaged in. Let's go out to your calls here. We got a couple callers all about the Candace debate. We'll start with Sean in California. Did you watch the debate between Candace Owens and Andrew Wilson? If so, what did you think, Sean?
Well, to be honest, Harrison, I think what Candace was doing was trying to avoid a trap to get sued because she learned from the misfortune that was done to Alex. So I think Candace's coyness, we're going to be in an era where everybody's going to be afraid to make statements because they made Alex into a straw man and destroyed the previous network. So I think that's why where her coyness was. And to be honest, Wilson didn't exactly really bring anything to the table. I'm not saying that as a stand for Candace. I'm saying that as someone who can look at patterns and notice, for example, whenever the left always does a gun attack, they always try to go after the AR-15. So the shooter always has an AR-15 type gun. In this case, it was a German Mauser. And I'm like, I haven't heard about Mauser since World War II. And who were the Germans fighting back then? Oh, wait. Right. So I'm just saying maybe there was, you know, some tells here that people, you know, are missing out on. Some of it, yes, is speculation, but the thing is Candace is correct and that she's pointing out there's certain things that had to be done procedurally. My irritants at the Kyle Rittenhouse trial was the same thing, that once the trial was underway and the defense was up there, they weren't swinging for the fences. They were asking tiddly little questions, and Rittenhouse, if not for the incompetency of the people, for example, that he shot, you know, the guy with the rebuilt arm and all that, if it wasn't for the incompetency of the prosecution, Rittenhouse very easily could have been jailed because he had a weak defense. Defense attorneys, prosecuting attorneys, and the judge all go golfing together. It's not a big secret. You know, it's a club, like George Carlin said. So yeah. Candace was very coy because she knew that somebody's hoping to sue her and get that $300,000 right back. It was like watching a game of cat and mouse, except you know, both the cat and the mouse are a little on the retarded side. And like I said to Rex on another occasion, Candace used a shotgun approach. It's sloppy, but it allows you to drop, you know, things that don't fit. And someone like Alex with experience, he's good because he's going to always sharpshoot something and show that, you know, everything is a lie because he knows, boom, like one good shot, he takes out a piece of the narrative and can hold it up and say, look, this is a lie. We shouldn't be satisfied right yet. But he's, you know, not going to jump over and say, oh, I know Tyler Robinson didn't do it. But I could see Twiggs, for example, you know, being an accomplice or at least obstruction of justice coming down that guy's way. I don't know what type of deal he got, but this debate didn't really further anything other than showing the YouTube chats how many bots they flooded the comments with. There was, trust me, there were a lot of bots.
Yeah, that was honestly the blackpilling thing was watching the chat the whole time and just being like, what are you people watching? Like, what are you looking at? Because you're certainly not watching the same thing I am. You know, I'm sure there is an aspect of that. I mean, that's obvious. If you watch the Stu Peters, Andrew Wilson debate, I mean, Stu Peters comes out and says it and is like, you're just trying to bait me into saying something to get me sued. That's obviously like very much in the forefront. But the idea that what Candace Owens is doing is anything equivalent or even in the same ballpark as Alex Jones and Sandy Hook. I mean, that is crazy. That's crazy. And, you know, there's still legal stuff going on, so I can't talk too much about it. But I'll just say one of the charges, the defamatory actions that we were hit with was literally questioning the guilt, or like questioning the, not guilt, but like sadness, questioning the grief of one of the widows. It's like, if that was the standard back then, everybody who's ever talked about Erica Kirk is guilty of that. So it's just like from back in 2012, where nobody questioned anything and anybody going, I don't really know about this. It's like, you are going to jail. Like, you know, to where now it's like, well, I said Erica Kirk killed Charlie, but I winked while I said it. And like, that's fine. It's like, if you're worried about having done to you what was done to Alex Jones, like they've crossed that line a billion times over, so much more than, I mean, Alex never was the Sandy Hook guy. He didn't go for a year every day making updates about Sandy Hook. Like that was never what he talked about, like two times when other guests came on and it was their topic that they covered. The comparison to me between what Candace Owens is doing and what Alex is doing is so far out of whack. It doesn't even make sense. And if you actually know what the case of Alex Jones was, you know that it was fraudulent. There wasn't anything defamatory that he actually said. So it's kind of like, how do you defend yourself against a crime you didn't commit? You know what I mean? It's like, well, you should be really careful because my friend got a jaywalking ticket here, and it's like, okay, but he got a jaywalking ticket while he was standing on the curb. So what, you know, it's like, is crossing the street really that big of a deal? It's like, you get, you know, if they want to target you, you don't have to actually do anything for them to come up with something to charge you with. So I don't know what Candace's thought is exactly, but if you're going by the Alex Jones standard, she's exceeded that many, many times over and repeatedly. So she doesn't seem that careful. All I'm saying is she doesn't seem that concerned about it. But I appreciate the call and the input, Sean. Great stuff. Let's go to Baker in California. Baker, thank you for calling in on the Candace debate. You're on the air.
Yo. Yeah, my problem with this whole thing is that I'm not on the, necessarily on the side of Candace, like the Fort Chewbacca or whatever, but like everyone that's saying Tyler did it is just assuming he did it because it's like the 9/11 thing. They're just assuming it was an inside job because they're like, oh, what are you suggesting? The people on Tyler Robinson, they're just assuming he did it because the other option is that there is a conspiracy, and so they're just kind of weighing their evidence. And I'm always on the underdog side, and so I feel like the people that have to make the case that Tyler Robinson did it were actually, like, trying to make a legit, like, hey, there's some weird stuff going on. So I don't really know where I stand on it, but I think both of them, like, Andrew Wilson, like, I don't know. I don't, like, they're, again, he's just assuming Tyler did it because there's no other option. So I don't know what you think about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think they just sort of are accepting the story as it's laid out. To me, the problem is that there are holes in that story and there are some inconsistencies. There are some timeline questions to all of it. But at the end of the day, Tyler Robinson is alive, right? He's going to get to prepare and present his defense. He can testify if he wants. If this is fake, I imagine he'll come out and say, I never wrote those letters. I never wrote those text messages. I never turned myself in. I never confessed. I mean, there's a time for him to do that. And it may be, you know, coming up, but I haven't seen his defense make that case yet. So I have a hard time making it in their stead.
Yeah. And can I say one more thing?
Yeah, please.
You know, he brought up like the FBI finding the gun. Like that was a ground. I mean, do these people know how patsies and cover up works? Just because you see him on video, I mean, they when everything was coming out on the case, they're like, oh my god, this video evidence and this, and then I'm like, dude, it's a patsy. You get a guy walking around, you have the FBI plant a gun, and everything, all the evidence that they're saying is there, is just a part of the cover-up. And I know, like, I don't know, it just doesn't make sense to me. And then they're saying that I mean, is it really about whether the bullet would go through his neck or would it just blow a hole open? It would just blow a hole open that would make his neck look like hamburger beef patty. Like, I don't know, dude. To me, it would just look so different. And then is that other video of the other guy fake? Did they talk about that? Or, I mean, the guy doing the army crawl and stuff and then flipping out like a foldable gun or something? That's weird. I don't know. So.
No, it's.
And listen, Charlie wasn't totally, listen, yeah, he was pro, like Nick Funch is like, dude, and Tim Pool said the same thing. They're like, they're trying to say that he was against Israel. He supported Israel. It's like, yeah, but there was glimpses of him not being full psychotic. Like he was a reasonable guy, actually. He was actually like, I don't know, like I actually used to not like him at all, but the more and more that I got into him, like, dude, this guy could actually be legit.
And yeah, well, and look, I always gave Charlie huge credit for the way he responded to the Groyper war because people, you know, came and interrupted him and asked him very pointed questions about American support for Israel, his support for homosexuality, this sort of stuff. And to his credit, he was like, I'm losing these debates. I need to change my position. He was starting to change his position. I mean, again, you can speculate, and I've made the case and, you know, like the day after it happened, I made this case and haven't really changed my mind since, which is if you are Israel and you have this massive asset in Charlie Kirk and he looks like he's flipping from being an asset to being a major antagonist to you, which is what would happen if, you know, he flipped on Israel, that would be a major blow to them. And I could see the reasoning that would say you don't wait until he changes to take him out. You take him out before he changes. So he can be your champion, your martyr. But if that was the case, then they would have had a Palestinian shoot him. They would have had a pro Islam person shoot him so he can make hay out of that. Things would have looked a little bit different, in my opinion, if that had been the case. However, I think it's perfectly valid, supposition, you know, to make a theory to run with. And again, you can make the argument. And the thing is, the way I approach all of this stuff is like, okay, the powers that be have enormous ability to sway things one way or the other. They can and you get a friendly judge, you get a judge that's on your side, you get a judge that will do favors for you, you can change the outcome of any proceedings that you want. I mean, judges have enormous leeway in their own courtrooms to decide things one way or the other, to arbitrarily. You can say Alex Jones can't bring up the First Amendment in his free speech case. Like, they can just do that sort of stuff. So there are ways that they can control things, but they're still human beings. They still have to contend with human will. They still have to be worried about leaving evidence. They still have to have a plan that corresponds with and conforms to physical reality, right? So think about it in this way. What would the planning session be like? What would the roundtable discussion look like when they're putting forward the plan to kill Charlie Kirk with a the exploding microphone? And there get to be times where in the imagined conversation, things start to not make sense anymore. Like, would they really get together and go, okay, we're going to put the device in, and well, it'll be on his chest and it'll take him out, but we can't have people know that it's the microphone. So what we need is a shooter in place where they could snipe him. So he'll have a gun and he'll sneak into position and he'll aim the gun. And then we'll have a device that has the sound of gunfire at the same time as the explosion. Would somebody sitting around that table not just go, if we're putting a sniper in place, should we not just use the sniper? What is the benefit exactly of using an exploding microphone? You have to have the two sounds simultaneous. If there's even a millisecond delay, it'll be an obvious scam. Like, that's a huge point of failure that you're creating when it's not necessary. I get that we need a patsy, so we're going to have somebody on the roof, but if they're going to be up on the roof with a sniper rifle, should they not just take, is that not the easier thing to do? Then we avoid all of these, potential, points of failure with the microphone and where you put it, and the explosion has to be timed perfectly, and you have to have the guy get up on the roof, because if the guy doesn't get up on the roof with the gun, then you can't have the explosion go off because you don't have the patsy to blame it on. And it's like, when you think about it that way, and I've said the same thing about like 9/11, where it's like, if you're planning it, are you going to get a plane full of people and gas them and remove them off and then destroy the plane somewhere and then build a holographic plane and align all the cameras? Or are you just going to fly a plane into the building? Like, at the end of the day, that's the easiest thing to do. Why would that not be the thing that they did? Now, you can say, well, it was remote controlled planes. The people that were blamed weren't the actual ones. All that's still valid. But why, if you're planning out this mission, would you add all of these variables, all of which become a point of failure, all of which complicate the scheme and make it less likely to succeed and more likely you get caught? If you got a guy with a sniper rifle in a position where he can kill Charlie Kirk, why would you not have that dude kill Charlie Kirk? So now you're not talking about drones. You're not talking about exploding microphones. Let's just establish the fact. I think it is a fact, and I thought it from the moment I saw the first video of it, that Charlie Kirk was shot by a sniper. That doesn't mean it was Tyler Robinson. It doesn't mean he was acting alone. That doesn't mean no other international, people were in on it. But can we start with that? Can we at least establish that no matter what, it's a conspiracy, it's a lone wolf, he probably really was shot from the roof? And you can debate the, caliber and the ballistics and all that stuff. Okay, you can get into those weeds, but we still acknowledge that Charlie Kirk was shot from an elevated position, and now everything else can start with that basis and not go off into the weeds about all this other stuff that genuinely doesn't make any sense. This is the way I think about these things. So if you were to ask me what I think the most, reasonable conspiracy that says, if you think Israel killed Charlie Kirk, what would be your evidence, or how would this have gone about? I'd say, okay, I think they had a professional sniper, probably an Israeli guy. They may have, inside information, since there's a lot of people very high up in Israel that, know Charlie intimately well. So again, you wouldn't have to have security in on it for security to be a valuable asset for the people carrying this out. Maybe they talk to him. Hey, what's your plan for security this week? You doing anything about the rooftops? Okay, you're taking care of that. That's fine. So you'd have a guy on the rooftop. He'd shoot Charlie Kirk. He would get off the roof and run to a waiting car in a place where, there's no security footage, no security cameras. Then you'd race them to the airport, have him hop on a private jet, take off, turn off the transponder, and he's, home and away to Israel. and you have a patsy and maybe a prepared, you know, evidence and stuff that you allow to be drip fed out over the ensuing 24 hours to frame it on this Tyler Robinson guy. And you either have him and his family blackmailed or bribed or in on it or not, or brainwashed or MK Ultra or something else. But it's not that far fetched. It's not that crazy of an idea. Now you start adding in exploding microphones. Now you're complicating it significantly. You start adding in elements of TPUSA being involved. Now you're in the realm of fantasy, I think. Because again, you know, from the very beginning, there were these questions about like, well, he was doing this Doge thing about, TPUSA and they, you know, they'd stolen $1 million and it's like, just think about it logically. Just think about it logically. I mean, if that was the case, let's say somebody at TPUSA got sticky fingers, thought they were being real clever, thought they could just siphon away a couple dollars here or there, and before you know it, they got $1 million off. Now, that person who did that, they don't seem like a hardened crook. Like, if that actually happened, I don't know if it did. This is sort of the vaguest supposition that I've heard people talk about. Do you realize what a jump it is from I, you know, illegally paid myself more than my salary to I shot a guy in the neck in front of a crowd? Like that's not how criminality works. That's not how this works. People don't get caught, you know, stealing something. You know, they get caught for a crime, 5 years in prison at most, and to cover that up, they murder a public figure right out in the open in front of everybody? Like, what? Why would they do that? Why would they do that? That's so much worse than stealing money. That's such a more intense crime, and you're going to have so much more scrutiny on you. And, like, why would you not just get the money and go to Tahiti and never be seen again? Like, the jump from, oh, Charlie is suspicious of about money being missing to let's shoot him in the neck on live TV in front of a crowd. Like, that's not how this works, y'all. It's really not. It's really not. Especially if the whole point was just to get rid of Charlie because he was going to catch you stealing money, then you could freaking poison his cereal, right? The reason it was done in public was either because it was a legitimate psychopath, like they're saying Tyler Robinson is, who just needed Charlie to be in a public place because that's where they were going to target him. They can't target him at home if they don't know where he is and what he's doing. They go to the public place to find him. Or because it was a conspiracy and they wanted to kill Charlie in a public way in order to instigate a psychological operation, like I think was an aspect of the 9/11 attacks, where they didn't just want to kill Americans. They wanted to have a display. They wanted to have an, you know, an image burned into your mind that defined the century going forward. So that's my take on all of it. You can make the case for Israel being involved. You can make the case for a leftist conspiracy. The problem is everybody who talks about this stuff every single day on every one of their shows cannot make the case for some reason. It's crazy. It genuinely is crazy. Now, like, you can watch an hour of this content 5 days a week for 10 months straight, and you never get just a coherent explanation of a theory, contrary to the official one. Crazy. Let's go to Tom in Colorado now. Oh, rather, we're about to go to break. I've rambled for too long. We'll go to break. We'll be back in just a few minutes. We'll pick it up with Tom from Colorado. We still got Chad and Friendly from Minnesota, Buck in Wisconsin, and we'll be taking your calls throughout the show today. 512-266-0642. Still a lot of news to cover as well. We're going to talk about more of the revelations about COVID, the mass murder that occurred with that. We're also going to get into Toka, which we talked about before with their connection to Flock, but it's a lot more information out there that you need to know. So stay tuned. Second half begins in 2 minutes.
My fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do when they want to silence you is go after your merchant accounts. Go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. It's globalist siege. It's globalist economic warfare. It's a globalist blockade, an embargo, sanctions against American populist patriots. For everyone that's been watching and listening to me for years, You've seen the attacks. You've seen the deplatforming. You've seen the court battles, the news articles, the demonization, the bogus default judgments. We even have FBI and CIA operatives on hidden camera talking about how their entire goal was to take me out of the knees by knocking out my ability to accept payments. And that model they used on me, they admit, is for all of you.
Alex Jones.
Yeah, so we were after him.
So with Alex Jones, and the goal with him was what, just to bankrupt him?
Pretty much.
Well, because of First United Payments and your support, they failed. And they failed because I had a processor with a backbone who loves America and believes in the free market. One who stands up for American justice and who didn't back down when they received threatening messages and pressure from other major institutions. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you. Meta, Facebook is watching you. Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if, it's when Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. Consolidation, vertical integration, that is the goal of the BlackRock globalist system. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. This is the key to their entire panopticonic takeover plan, in their own words. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, was very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system, even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They've just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. Visit First United Payments now at FirstUnitedPayments.com. And talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. That's 877-899-1313. The tyrants are counting on us not to innovate. They're counting on us not to migrate to institutions and organizations that are pro-human just like us. This isn't some new company. I've been using them for almost a decade. They're already taking care of most of the patriots. Whether you're a florist, have a gas station, or you're a farmer, or you've got a little five and dime shop or a factory, whatever it is, online merchants, this is the place for you. These guys are patriots and they're in our corner. They're Americans just like us and they hate the New World Order with a passion. They believe in the free market and they understand this is 1776 2.0. 90% of it is information warfare and financial. And this is just as important as the right to self-defense and guns. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down. And First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Thank you so much. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back, folks. Calls still pouring in. I want to remind you, folks, the only way to support us is by going to thealexjonesstore.com. It's the only way that we get any income. We don't really have sponsors to point you to. We certainly don't have billionaires opening their pockets to us. We rely on you supporting us and yourself by going to thealexjonesstore.com. It's a true 360 win, meaning that you are getting a fantastic product, but you're also helping keep us on the air and dealing a black eye, metaphorically, to the New World Order. But most of all, you're getting a fantastic product that is going to benefit you, especially when paired with, you know, diet and lifestyle changes. But really, you know, the best reason to go tonight and soon, there's two best reasons. If you order something over $100 or spend $100 or more, you get a free cooler with your order, but that ends tonight. It's a limited edition design, and once it's gone, it is not coming back. So any order over $100 gets that free cooler, and no matter what you spend, you're going to get entries to win both the 2026 Ram 2500 Laramie and a 2026 Ford F-250 Super Duty, plus $20,000 in cash. Every $100 you spend gets 10,000 entries, but this double up offer ends tonight. Someone's got to win it. It's probably somebody listening to my voice right now. All you have to do is go to thealexjonesstore.com, make a purchase, and be entered to win one or both of these incredible cars. With that, we'll go back out to your calls. We'll talk a little bit more about the Candace Owens, Andrew Wilson debate. But then I do want to get into some of the big tech companies that are working feverishly behind the scenes to establish the control grid, including ones that you may not have heard before, but are going to play a very big role in your enslavement if you're not aware of them. Let's go to Tom in Colorado. Do we already listen to Tom? Were we talking to him earlier? Tom, do we hear you earlier? You're on the air.
A limited edition design. Once it's gone, it is not coming back.
Hey, wait,
back.
That's me. If you can turn your radio down, Tom, we'll go to you now. But sounds like he's listening to the show a few seconds. And Tom, are you there? All right, let's go to Chad in Minnesota. Wants to talk about the debate. Chad, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for the time. Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's a waste of time. I watched just a small portion of it this morning, and the debate, obviously. And I'm just curious. I didn't watch much, so maybe I think you had mentioned that you watched the entirety of it.
I watched a lot of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Do you know if they discussed the Cash Patel angle and the FBI with him shutting down the foreign intelligence probe?
They certainly mentioned it. I don't know if they, I mean, they didn't really get to any conclusion on anything. So, but I certainly his name was brought up.
That would be my number one, I guess, overall, is try to debate and go into fine detail as to why that happened, what occurred. What, you know, who was involved? It sounds obviously like Joe Kent was, you know, the source of that. Tulsi Gabbard was there, obviously. So, and then that information broke on your, the station, right? I mean,
yeah. Yeah, we broke that.
So, yeah. So I find it interesting that, you know, if it wasn't, I don't know, I didn't watch it. So if it wasn't pursued or if they didn't debate much about it, that just seems very odd. And I think it's convenient that they didn't find, or Tyler Robinson didn't turn himself in a short period of time to get like a gunshot residue test. I don't think that's ever been brought up. I know the ballistic test has been brought up or was examined, but a gunshot residue would have cleared that whole thing up. So I don't know. Maybe there was some planning on when to have himself, you know, supposedly turn himself in. I think that's convenient for that aspect. I feel like the intelligent aspect of it, if we can't get any information out of our own FBI, and if they have to work with the CIA or DNI and all that just goes sideways, I think that's the answer that, you know, is pretty much telling us what's going on there, in my opinion. So.
Yeah, it's definitely, a gap in knowledge that has yet to be filled, yet to be explained, convincingly why the apparently very real. And, but, you know, there's other stuff about this. And this is the type of thing that I'm like, I really don't get it. And it makes me suspicious of Candace, some of these things. So, like, there was the text message that Candace, and very early on in the whole thing, Candace released text messages, of Charlie Kirk saying, I'm done with the Israeli cause and I'm leaving. And these text messages came from the government, meaning they were turned in as evidence. And then when she presented it, the veracity of it was confirmed because Andrew Colvett said he was the one that provided those text messages. So, okay, when Charlie Kirk is killed and the FBI goes to his close associates and says, who do you think killed him? Do you have any idea who might be behind this? And Andrew Colvett himself provides text messages pointing the finger at Israel. Are we taking this into account? Because now Andrew Colvett, his response might be a little bit more understandable. In other words, He just saw his boss and good friend murdered. He apparently had some suspicion that it could have been Israel. He turned that information into the government, and now Candace Owens is blowing up his spot and going, this guy thinks Israel killed him. I can see Andrew Colvett being like, haha, what? No, that's crazy. I would never think that. It's like this type of thing just gets lost in the mix where it's like Andrew Colvett's the bad guy who's, you know, covering everything up. And it's like, but he's the one that originally seemed to be suggesting to the government that they look into Israel. So how does that fit in to the mosaic? And does that not explain some of his behavior afterwards? That maybe he's in a spot where he thinks that his boss just got killed by a foreign state and now he might be the one with the target on his back and that might inform how he, you know, does things. It's that type of stuff that it's like, I guess it's kind of inconvenient because it makes it less of a black and white Candace versus TPUSA thing to say that, well, TPUSA was the one providing this data to the government to look at Israel. But like you got to incorporate that is what happened. So you, even if it makes it a little bit less clean cut, if you exclude that part, you're going to be off the mark. You're not going to be pursuing the truth. You're pursuing something else. So it's stuff like that in all of this that just gets missed or left out on purpose. And that's the type of thing that I think if Candace was genuinely trying to find the truth and was genuine in what she says her drive is and why she's doing all of this, then wouldn't you want to factor that in? I mean, wouldn't you want to put that into the pile of evidence that you're going through? And for some reason, it just is looked over or ignored. And I don't get that. Do you see what I mean, Chad? Am I making any sense here?
Yeah, absolutely. It feels like a convenience thing or something that just if you're not paying attention. You know, it's really easy to just. It's that limited hangout feel of a lot of stuff where it's like you talk about a lot of things that make sense and then it's, you know, obviously you can be speculative, but then, you know, you'll throw something in there that just, you just say, wait a minute, what?
What's yeah.
It just doesn't. But, you know, hey, I totally agree with that. You know, I want to just real quick with COVID, what you had mentioned earlier, I'm glad that you talk about the fact that there is the aspect of, listen, you know, it wasn't a leak or it wasn't a lab leak. You could say that and okay, well, a lab leak, but it was intentionally released. Or was there even a virus? I mean, I know that the FOIA thing is out there and, you know, do they actually have it contained? Have we seen, you know, that sort of thing? You can go in multiple different directions, but I think it's key that you discuss that because it wasn't, the players that are involved, like Dr. Robert Kadlec and Fauci and Collins and those individuals, they, you know, you talk about limited hangout. Kadlec came out in November 2023 and was interviewed and said, yeah, I had that conversation with Collins and Fauci that we had to get up ahead of this, you know, that people were starting to discuss the lab leak theory. And they never discussed the fact that was it released intentionally. They just say it's a lab leak. And that's a huge factor. And that's how these players work this, where they kind of, you know, they go, they pit each other against each other, but they're all in it together. And it's just like WWE, you know, and Fauci is, it's great that they're going after him, but there's many other, Dr. Robert Kadlec, everybody should look into that guy. There's a lot of information about His ties with the weapons of mass destruction, the anthrax, he was working for. Look at his resume. He's been behind a lot of all of the HHS, the ASPR, BARDA. But he currently has that, I think he's assistant director of nuclear deterrence and chemical and biological warfare. I mean, that's a big position. People need to look into that guy. He is shady, and I think he knows a lot more than what, you know, is being let on. And he's just, I think that that's on top of Collins, Fauci, but Kadlec has been around since Bush, so he's prior, and also Barrick with having the information or having the lab that created remdesivir.
Right.
Like, how come that's not out there? So there's a lot of stuff, but I'm glad that you're talking about that because that's a huge factor in all of this. And I think it plays into what they're doing with their limited hangout kind of special operations thing that they got going on. So thank you for your time.
Well,
have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too. And on that note, again, you know, it's bittersweet. It's like, yeah, we told you so. You know, we were right about this. At the same time, there's something so, I don't know, just it's like flat. It's like the stuff gets revealed and it's like, no, this should be inspiring a revolution. People should hang for this, literally, after a trial, obviously. But top NYC doc says ventilators were overused during peak of COVID-19. Ventilators were used too much during the height of COVID-19 pandemic in New York and turned out to be less effective than other treatments. I think this is actually an article from 2020, but the latest studies were saying that, yeah, ventilators probably killed more people than they saved, which is what we knew the entire time, and that's what remdesivir, you know, contributed to those deaths. And we would report at the time that nurses were calling it run death is near because they knew that remdesivir simply killed the people that it was supposed to help and that it was the only cure or treatment or anything that was allowed, despite the fact that there were things like ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. Those, of course, had to be prevented and called horse face and discredited so they could have the emergency use authorization. So, yeah, I mean, just scam upon scam. Totally outrageous. Then nothing has been done about this yet. In fact, I mean, there are some things happening that I have to celebrate, you know. The Trump administration, and I don't know if it's just because they're really feeling the heat and starting to realize how close we are to the midterms and like, oh, gee, we better do something for somebody like now because we're running out of time. But J.D. Vance has come out making an announcement about charging people over gender surgery, which, again, is good, and I hope we're taking this as seriously as we should. Let's go to clip number two here. For years now, some hospitals and healthcare providers have been subjecting children to horrific experimental treatments in service of radical gender ideologies. Today, thanks to the Wolves in White Coats report released by HHS.gov, we know why for profit. Here's J.D. Vance announcing the federal referrals of hospitals named in his HHS report on pediatric gender medicine and insurance billing. Let's watch.
Hey, everybody. This is Vice President J.D. Vance. I'm here with my friends and colleagues, of course, our great Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Admiral Brian Christine, the Assistant Secretary for Health. Parents bring their children to doctors because they trust them. They trust doctors to tell them the truth, and they trust hospitals to put their children ahead of ideology and profit. But when that trust gets violated, parents deserve to have a government that will stand up for them and for their kids and do something about it. Today, the Trump administration is proud to announce we're doing exactly that.
Today, HHS released Wolves in White Coats, a report examining pediatric gender medicine and insurance billing across America. The findings raise serious questions about what families were told, what insurers were told, and how these procedures were built.
Today, Secretary Kennedy and I referred hospitals and clinics identified by this review to the Department of Justice and the HHS Inspector General for possible violations of federal law. These allegations are crazy, and they demand investigation. When children may have been harmed and families misled, it's on those of us in power to find the truth and to seek justice for kids who are harmed by these doctors.
Under the previous administration, my predecessor, Richard Levine, promoted what he called gender-affirming care for minors. And there's nothing caring about that. These are sex-rejecting, mutilating, transgender procedures promoted by the Biden administration. And thanks to President Trump's leadership, we're changing course. The Wolves in White Coats report issued by my office at HHS examines a medical system that subjected children to profound interventions while serious questions remained about evidence, about informed consent, and about financial incentives. The report found more than 225 hospitals and health systems established pediatric gender programs nationwide where they preyed on vulnerable children and told families that their kids needed life-altering medical treatments, when what they really needed was compassion and counseling.
So many of these people got rich, not by doing what was good for the patient, but by actually mutilating these kids. It was disgraceful. And if someone broke the law, we are going to hold them accountable.
If the medical establishment failed children, we will confront that failure and restore the sacred duty to do no harm.
And if our public health institutions lost the trust of American families, we're going to earn it back with truth, with transparency, and with gold standard science.
Together, we're going to protect our children, and importantly, we're going to restore trust in public health. When you walk into the doctor's office, you have to know that they're going to do the best by yourselves, by your children, by your family. And we will hold accountable anyone who would betray that trust. We've got so many great doctors. We can't have a few bad doctors tarnish the whole lot. Thank you, everybody.
So it's absolutely incredible. This is the type of stuff that the Trump administration should have been doing this entire time, actually going after the people that are targeting our kids, actually going after the hospitals that are tricking children into experimental procedures that literally cripple them for life in some cases. And we've played the videos. You know, one of the gender-affirming care doctors admits, she's like, yeah, once you do this procedure, you will basically never experience sexual satisfaction again. Which it's like, you're doing that to children. You are depriving children of one of the greatest joys of life for all time because you tricked them with a Blue's Clues cartoon into thinking that liking dolls means they need to chop their nuts off. Like, it's so evil what they're doing. And this is maybe the first time ever that we've seen an official from the American government treat this like what it actually is, an attack on children, a exercise in complete fraud, and really a violent crime that's despicable. I'm not interested in Republicans going, well, you know, we got to care for our transgender students. Well, they need to feel like they're accepted as well. It's like, do you not understand this is an attack? Genuinely, what is going on with you? And I'm talking about this with, you know, parents that I know in my life where, like, their kid comes back home from kindergarten thinking they're a different gender, and I have to explain to them, like, that's an attack. Your child was propagandized. Because the parent, they're just like, oh, this is weird. They're just like, what? He thinks he's a girl? And it's like, this is kind of, then they go and they say, hey, what's going on? Why does he think? And they go, oh, well, this is, you know, something that you need to accept and, you know, help them work through it. And they get the advice, and the parents don't know what the hell's going on. So they're just like, oh, okay. It's kind of weird. I don't really get it, but if it helps them, you know, find themselves, I'll do whatever I can. And it's like, no, your child has been propagandized by somebody who hates them. They've been convinced of a psychotic lie. They're being indoctrinated into a satanic religion that demands that they deform themselves permanently for mental health that they've been injected with, that didn't exist before they were propagandized into it. Like, what do you not understand? This is an attack. So, you know, J.D. Vance and RFK Jr. might not have gone quite that far, but certainly treating this with the, you know, simultaneously the disrespect and the respect it deserves, right? The disrespect it deserves is the army man on the right there saying, my predecessor, Richard Levine, right? Because we're not going to play along and pretend that a man named Richard with long blonde stringy hair is actually a woman named Rachel. We're not going to do that. That's not reality. We're not going to engage and entertain your bizarre fantasy fetish. Okay. So that's the disrespect that this whole thing deserves. But the respect that it deserves is saying this is not an accident. This isn't misguided people. This is an attack on our children, our way of life, our reality itself. And you can't just shrug it off or you change your own way of life, you know, to comport with this newly imagined phenomenon. No, it's an attack. It's anti everything that is good. So let's just destroy it and crush it and not just, you know, politely ask that people not do it, but actually say you are mutilating children. We're going to stop you because it's a crime to mutilate children. What? Crazy that this is even a thing. So once again, this would have, you know, hey, February 2025, this would have been awesome. Now it's pretty good. I mean, I like it, but you know, This is what they should have been doing literally the entire time. If the entire Trump administration had been like weekly reports like this, here's J.D. Vance talking about how they're going to punish doctors who push transgenderism. Amazing. You know, here's the deportation numbers. We got out 1 million this week. We just set a record. Fantastic. Like, and again, there's a barrier to this in reality. It's not like we don't have the money or the resources or anything necessary to get this done. We're just not doing it. So it's very frustrating. It's good to see this. Better late than never. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services released a report Thursday identifying millions of dollars in insurance claims that billed for underage gender transition procedures under false pretenses. This from AlexJonesLive.com. The 64-page report called Wolves in White Coats, How Doctors and Hospitals Pushed and Profited from the Fraud of Gender Medicine, examined more than 225 hospitals and health systems nationwide that offer pediatric gender programs by reviewing scientific literature, hospital records, whistleblower accounts, insurance claims, and interviews with parents, patients, and their parents. It found approximately $50 million in insurance claims for puberty blockers billed using endocrine disorder diagnostic code E34.9. It further reported that nearly $11 million in claims for patients 13 through 17 were billed using a diagnosis code for precocious puberty. Findings, the report said, warrant additional review of insurance coding practices. So in other words, you can have a legitimate disease or condition like early onset puberty or, endocrine disruption, precocious puberty, that's, early, puberty setting in early than is natural. And there are medicines to deal with those diseases. Now they want those medicines, but the person that they're prescribing it to doesn't actually have the disease. They're using it recreationally or, they're choosing to use it to try to stop puberty from happening, not because it's precocious puberty that would lead to health issues down the line. It's a choice they're making. And this is good. Yeah, it's cosmetic, I guess, surgery is how you could phrase it, which obviously insurance wouldn't cover things you're choosing to do that you don't need. And this goes back to, like, I bet we can find videos from 2021 where I'm covering this, because some of the earliest coverage I did about transgenderism stuff on War Room or on American Journal at the time was about the change in definition of what defines transgenderism. And how it was changed in a very particular way. Remember, it used to be body dysmorphia, which means that there's a problem between your perception and your body. Anorexia would be a body dysmorphia because while you may be incredibly skinny, your brain processes the image of your own body as being very fat. And that's a problem. And it causes you actual pain because then you're treating your body as if it doesn't need food when it does. So that's dysmorphia. Dysphoria says your body is correct, it's your brain that's wrong. Or it's the other way around. Your brain is right, your body is wrong. Like, it's a subtle change, and it's a change of definition, but the reason they did it was because they wanted to both say it's not a mental illness, being that the person's crazy. It's a physical deformity, so it's not a mental illness, they're not crazy, but also it still needs to be covered by insurance. It's very particular, and that's why they named it the way that they did, because they wanted the procedures covered by insurance, but they knew that it was elective.
My fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do when they want to silence you is go after your merchant accounts, go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you. Meta, Facebook is watching you. Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if, it's when Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, was very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system, even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They've just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. and talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A. by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down. And First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Online merchants, this is the place for you. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Look, I don't normally do this, but this is an emergency message. It has to get out. James Fishback is within 5% of Byron Donalds. No, this is not a fake poll. This is not something from the Donalds campaign or Jay Collins or Fishback or anybody else. This is a real legitimate poll polling the early voting, right? Not just making phone calls to people. They are polling on the ground right now in the early voting for the primary. Right? And they are able to look at those numbers and tell with an extreme amount of accuracy that James Fishback is within 5%. That is striking distance. Within 5% of Byron Donalds right now. And that is the leading, most accurate indicator of what the final election, come election day, August 18th, next Tuesday, will end up being. Right now, Byron Donalds is about 35%, James is about 30, and Jay Collins is about 20, 21%. So here's the deal. A vote for Jay Collins is a vote for a Democrat. I'm going to say it again. You need to hear it. This is how politics works. A vote for Jay Collins is a vote for Florida to be blue. Why? Because if you vote for Collins, instead of taking that energy, throwing it behind Fishback, then Byron wins. And if Byron wins, I'm not saying he's a Democrat, although I can make that argument. If Byron wins, the polls have been clear for months now that Byron loses to the Democrat who's running for governor. The only person who beats the Democrat is James Fishback. And he's 5% away from Donalds, from Byron Donalds, the Trump-endorsed candidate, right now. We have a week to go, a week on the clock. James Fishback and his team are running like a machine. They are making 25,000 phone calls every single day, and they are not stopping. It is a sprint to the finish. They have been running this whole time for months, and now it is a sprint to the finish. We need to double those phone calls from 25,000 to 50,000 for the next week, the next 7 days, and James can win. And he will be Florida's governor come next year. We got to double the phone calls. Volunteer your time. I forget the website. Just Google Fishback Call Center. James Fishback Call Center. You can click on the website, get signed up easily to volunteer. Just make 2 or 3 or at most 5 phone calls each day between now and next Tuesday, August 18th, and call on August 18th. Make as many calls as you can, but even if it's just 2 or 3 or 5 phone calls a day, if we triple the number of volunteers making calls, the calls will increase. We can get it from 25,000 to 50,000. That can bridge the gap of the 5% that James is polling down below Byron's right now. He can win, not by a landslide, I'm going to shoot you straight, but he can win by a margin. There is no runoff in Florida. If James wins by one vote, then he gets to go in the general against the Democrat in which he is polling in every single scenario to win. If we can get James up 5% with the call centers and by you getting your friends and family, if you live in Florida, to vote for James Fishback, if we can do that, he can barely beat Donalds. And if he barely beats Donalds, as a wise man once said, it doesn't matter if he wins by an inch or a mile. A win is a win. One vote above Donalds, he becomes the Republican candidate. And he will, according to all the polls, beat the Democrat. And we will then have a Christian nationalist patriot as a governor of the third most significant state in the Union. You say you care about Christian nationalism, you care about the life of the unborn. James Fishback is the only one who has called abortion murder and said, promised, and signed a legal document to hold him to his promise that he will shut down every single abortion clinic in the state of Florida. Nobody else is talking like that. He is the most pro-life candidate, the most Christian candidate, and the most patriotic candidate. If you're a Christian nationalist, if you're an abolitionist, if you're pro-life, if you are an American patriot, if you're simply just even a MAGA Republican or even a neocon that doesn't want a Democrat in office, the choice is clear. You must vote for James Fishback because the Democrat will beat Byron Donalds. You have to vote for James Fishback, and all of you patriots, you need to do beyond just voting yourself. You need to volunteer. This includes guys who are out of the state of Florida, like myself. Volunteer your time. Google James Fishback Call Center. Give some time. Make some calls. 1 week on the clock. Let's get it done.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bigley has launched an online pharmacy, 1776rx.health. It's one product we're launching with, my decision, and that is ivermectin with minbenazidil, both powerful, really good anti-parasitics. It doesn't just get the big worms and all the crap that's out there. It's amoebas, it's microplasms. It is so important. These two together, I mean, ivermectin is a Nobel Prize winning for this, but minbenazidil is the big one. And folks, it isn't just parasites. Just search minbenazidil studies. Just put that into a search engine and you'll see congressional hearings. You'll see top scientists. You'll see all the studies on what else it does that they don't want you to know about. It's dramatic. So, and you won't know if you had any type of parasitical deal or whatever until you've done this. And a lot of people went there yesterday. A lot of people got it. Very smart move. 1776rx.health.
All right, welcome back, folks. You just heard a little call to action by Joel Webbin. Get out the vote for James Fishback. Exit polls from the early voting show him within 5 points. That is striking distance of Byron Donalds. And it would be absolutely incredible if James Fishback could become governor of Florida. So if you want to help out with that, you know, I just had the URL. I believe it's phonefishback.com. Phonefishback.com. You can contribute to that. And, you know, it's one Republican absolutely worthy of voting for, James Fishback, in my opinion. Should probably get him on the show before the time limit runs out. So Fishback for Florida, phone bank for Fishback. Find the URL there. Okay. We'll go to your calls here. And then get into TOCA and some of the other developments with Israel. But first, Friendly in Minnesota, thanks so much for holding. You're on the air.
Hey, Harrison, can you hear me?
Yes, you're fine. Go ahead.
Hi, Harrison. So I'm a bit disappointed that this is the topic of the day. I get it's the biggest story on the internet, but it's been a slow news day. And I'll explain why. I think we need to start applying a litmus test to the political content that we consume. And that litmus test is very simple. Does it move the needle and does it save our race? That's all I care about. And people have a very short memory. People don't remember who Candace Owens was. She is a grifter. She's an idiot. She had a whole website dedicated to doxing anyone right of her. Any potential influencer that could unseat her from her power. She's not very smart. It's all political fanfare. It's political theater. It's political histrionics. And as for Andrew, he's your typical internet intellectual egghead who's more concerned with protecting his fragile ego with rhetoric rather than providing solutions. I've never heard either one of them provide a solution ever. It's like this Lindsey Clancy murder case. My girlfriend brought this to my attention. I had never heard of it. And
give people a run. I know what you're talking about, but give people a rundown in case they don't know.
It's a psyop. I mean, I don't know how else to say it. It's white man bad, basically. Well, it's a drama because one of these parents killed their three kids and maybe one set up the other. And it's all stupid.
But basically the mother is accused of suffocating three children, and she had a long history of like mental illness, and apparently like they thought she was doing better, so the dad went out to get groceries, and when he came back he found his children dead, and she had cut her wrist and jumped out the window, and I guess she fractured her spine, but people are saying that it didn't look like she was actually trying to kill herself, like the cuts weren't deep enough to do any actual damage. And apparently this woman has a bunch of supporters, mostly female supporters like TikTok users, that are either claiming that she's framed by the husband or that she was suffering a real mental illness and it was the husband's fault anyway. So just in case people don't know the case you're talking about, I think that's more or less the facts, right?
Yep, you nailed it. Yeah, it's political theater is what it is. It's crime drama goy slop. That's all it is. And so I think we need to take these things seriously, because the biggest lie that the media tells is not the lies that they tell. It's the truths that they don't tell.
Right.
And by getting people to hyper-focus on something that does not move the needle, that's how we are divided. And we're out of time, guys. There are hundreds of thousands of white men, women, and children who are raped and killed and sold into slavery and human trafficked every single year. But you don't hear about that, do you? You hear about the goy slop. Mm-hmm. And we need to reject the goy slop. And this, too, I love Alex, but he's been on one this week about this, Huckabee's turning against Israel and Trump and even this J.D. Vance crap, RFK Jr. It's too late. That doesn't move the needle. How many times do we have to win the Fell For It Again award? How many times, like a stray dog, do we have to gobble up this red meat? We're out of time, folks. We need to be concerned with solutions only, period, because we're on our own.
Well, let me ask you this. When it comes to somebody like Candace Owens or even Tucker Carlson, people that I see as the enemy are very concerned about it and seem very angry about what they're saying. So to me, I'm sort of like, okay, if my enemies hate this, there's got to be something to it. It doesn't mean, of course, you support it just because your enemies hate it, but it's certainly a reason to look at it carefully. And then, I mean, what do you say? Because I agree with you, maybe not completely, but I agree with you more or less. I don't think Candace is an idiot per se. I don't think, she provides that much value if you watch her show. And I've said this forever. I'm like, I'll watch her show looking for a clip. I do a 3-hour show a day. I'd love to get a clip where it's like, look at what Candace revealed. Isn't this a bombshell thing? And there's just nothing there. So I get that. But it's like her popularity cannot be ignored. Clearly, there's something compelling about this. And it's like, what do you do with this gigantic millions of like wine moms that are obsessed with Candace Owens and watching her every second? I mean, this is a lot of people. This could be a useful population to activate politically. Even if they're not, totally on the money, they seem to be doing some amount of damage to the general, Israeli propaganda efforts. I'm just trying to push back a little bit and just kind of ask you like, because I completely agree with you. And like I said earlier, you watched the chat of the debate, and I think I was watching it on, it must've been Candace Owens' channel, cause it was simulcast on PBD and, Crucible and Candace Owens. And the chat, I'm just like, oh my God, these people. And it's like kind of, it's kind of blackpilling being like, how can so many people not be able to apply logic to this? But like, that is the fact. That is the case. I mean, these people exist and maybe some of them are bots, but most of them are real people and they're dedicated to this. And I don't know. I have a hard time just sort of, ignoring it. I don't know. Do you get what I'm saying? That there's something there that Candace is tapping into. I don't know if ignoring it is the right thing. How could we actually turn this to our advantage? Any ideas about that?
I get it. And forgive me for sounding jaded. I've been in the movement for a long time, man. And
yeah,
I've seen this so many times before. And to be honest, I'm a national socialist, right? So right. Of course, if we're going to criticize the Jews in Israel, I'm all for it. But Alex is right in a lot of ways. We got to focus on Chinese. We got to focus on the big tech. We got to focus on a bunch of stuff, right?
Right.
And I think the reason why this is allowed is because I think long term, this will actually demonize the movement, much like what happened with all of the like Waco and Ruby Ridge back in the 90s. The purpose of that was to discredit the movement and make people scared.
Yeah.
I know psyops. I know how they work. And it's just that this ain't my first rodeo, you know, mm-hmm. and maybe we can wake up some of them people. And I'm glad that, although I'm a bit bitter, I'm glad that we can at least talk about things like the JQ and stuff like that now. Cause I got homies in prison all over the world doing time in prison because it was hard to do it back then.
Yeah.
And they paid their dues. And I haven't heard anyone shout out the greats, the shoulders of giants that we stand upon. And I just don't find it productive. And honestly, if it's the kind of person who's going to latch on to that entertainmentism and not apply the litmus test, I don't think those people are going to be very valuable because we need to be in solution mode and not celebrity gossip mode. Hmm. And I think that's really all this is. It's a crime drama.
It is. Obviously, true crime is a gigantic genre of content now that, Candace Owens has tapped into a little bit, largely female, middle class women love true crime. It's been true forever. And there's, you know, a certain element of that. And there was something else you mentioned that I was going to comment on as well, because I agree with you. It's all debate. Oh, well, just the celebrity guys, like I forget. But like every once in a while, I'll go back and I'll listen to, like, for a while, I liked listening to the old, like, Opie and Anthony, radio show from like the early 2000s. And you forget that like 90% of what people talked about back then was celebrities. It's sort of fallen by the wayside. Celebrities have discredited themselves. Nobody likes celebrities or respects them anymore. So, and they're not quite this, like, you know, these figures. They all have accounts now, so you can see exactly who they are and people don't really like them. But like, I think we forget that before Donald Trump, people didn't talk about politics. They talked about celebrities all the time. So I think when politics came in and everything came political and the celebrity gossip kind of fell by the wayside, now there's this weird kind of enmeshment, this merger of the two, where people have this desire to hear the gossip, to hear the drama, to hear the personalities clash with each other. And that's merged and morphed into politics. So you now have like TMZ is now on Capitol Hill. They're following this trend. So certainly it's like we no longer have the celebrity gossip, but the celebrity gossip is now inextricably bound with the political gossip, and it certainly doesn't portend well. Really appreciate the call, Friendly, and appreciate you holding, and you're always super, super informed. Would love to have you call back in again soon, but let's go now to who's been on longer. Looks like Cody, or no, I'm sorry, Buck. Buck in Wisconsin. Thanks for calling in. Thanks for holding. You're on the air, Buck.
Hey, I wanted to talk about Japan real quick, but since you mentioned it about Candace Owens, I haven't heard you mention that she's a self-admitted Mason. And I think the
really?
Other guy is, so a Mason. But yeah, she admitted it on her show, and then she had the Masonic Bible on her table.
Are you sure?
Yeah, there's clips on it online. You can look it up.
Well, the reason
she said it after the Charlie Kirk assassination, like not to mess with her because she's a Mason.
Was she joking? Because I happen to know that you cannot be Catholic and a Mason at the same time. So she's very clearly Catholic. I mean, if the Catholic Church finds out you're a Mason, they don't let you take communion. So I would be suspicious of that. I thought she talks about, Masons. I thought, that was part of her conspiracies. You know, she gets into that sort of stuff. I would be very surprised if she was connected to the Masons at all. But you're right.
She said it herself online. She said it on herself on video during one of her streams after the Kirk assassination. But anyway, I called because you were speaking about Japan the other day, and we both have a fondness for that country, and they're kind of dealing with similar struggles as like Europe and America. And I was over there for vacation and talking with them, and they're really red-pilled over there, surprisingly.
Right.
They were telling me about how they, with their eels that they eat, eels that they feed the baby eels and pregnant eels a lot of soy to turn them into women.
Oh.
There's like still that big soy epidemic we have, like all those delicious free sauces at the fast food restaurants from Chick-fil-A or any of the places all are just soy bombs, and, you know, we got to prevent the soy boy epidemic. And they were telling me about how, obviously, they were super suspicious with the COVID vax because, you know, them living in Tokyo, they're so close together. They're all about vaccination, and, you know, they're very healthy people, and they were dropping left and right. And on the same note, actually, on a little sidebar with COVID, we spoke about it before, and it's kind of been brought back up in the news with the Fauci cell phone disclosures about the pregnancies, something to take in the note. You brought it up during your show that the only country that did not have a decrease in fertility issues was Israel, which is kind of like a smoking gun, I think, you know, and a point that should be brought up.
Well, and RFK Jr. Brought that up as well.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. You read my mind.
Very suspicious.
Can't find the, yeah, and, you know, I think it's something that needs to get addressed, like how they were able to avoid that, what's that situation over there. And, yeah, I thought that was an important thing, especially seeing on X that Jones is collecting clips in relation to Israel's blitzkrieg, you know, throughout the world, like you're saying, like they're even going into Colombia now, you know. And I don't know, part of me kind of like understands where they're coming from, because they're playing dirty and they're such a small country, 15 million, you know. But on the other hand, you know, it's like they became like the exact monsters that they railed against, like with Hitler and stuff. Like they're basically doing Hitler's playbook, you know, to a T.
This is the frustrating thing, is if you apply their own standards to them, like we should be at war with them. Like, yeah, I talked about this, had a post go semi-viral yesterday, the day before, talking about the German Templar sect in Palestine. And of course, I bring it up to point out that, you know, a bunch of German Lutherans in the late 1800s moved to Palestine and created a thriving colony, essentially, but never had any problems with the locals. Like, they just, you know, joined the Palestinian society and helped found schools and hospitals and all this sort of stuff. And so, of course, I point out that when the Eastern European Jews arrived and decided we have to kill everybody, it's not because they tried to be nice and it didn't work. They arrived with sort of a murderous mindset. And I was pointing this out, that it seems to be the only solution. You even hear it now with Mark Levin going, you've got to kill these people. You can't talk to them. You can't negotiate with them. All they understand is force. And it's like, okay, that's what you said in 1948. You're still fighting that battle. So where's the proof? But I brought up the Templar sect again to illustrate the difference. And if you watch the Off Limits News episode about Rise and Kill First, where I talk about the Templar sect, it's like so there were these Germans. They were living in Palestine during World War One. I believe they were actually like interned by the British. Like the British saw them as, you know, foreign enemies. They were German, so they interred them during World War One, and then they were let out. And then during World War Two, a lot of the Germans in Palestine went back to Germany to fight for the Nazis. And then when they lost, they returned to Palestine. Long story, you know, this is a long story, but the point is that the leadership of the German Templars were murdered by the proto-Israelis. Israel didn't exist as a state, but the sort of terrorist groups that would eventually form the IDF killed all the leadership of these Germans and then took over their neighborhood, and that became the headquarters of the IDF, and I believe it still is to this day. And the people who did the murder are, you know, they have quotes where they're like, these Germans, you know, they came back after the war, and they thought they could get away with, you know, taking Jewish people's stuff. And basically one of the leaders of this German Templar sect during the war had confiscated Jewish people's stuff, or helped in sort of the rounding up of Jewish people and confiscating their property and kicking them out of neighborhoods. And so to the Jews in Israel who killed them, like that was the crime, was like, you dispossessed Jewish people. You stole their stuff. You forced them out of their homes. You sent them to camps. And my thing is, that's literally what happened to these very Germans in World War One. So if taking somebody's stuff and forcing them to leave the land that they consider their home is enough to kill them, then what do you deserve? Then what do the Israelis deserve, right? So it's like, if that's the standard, well, they took Jewish people's stuff, so they're our enemy, and they, you know, we get to kill them. And it's like, okay, but literally 10 years ago, it was the British with the Jews in mandatory Palestine who confiscated the German stuff and sent the Germans to camps. So, you know, what standard are we holding people to here? And this is repeated, you know, continuously here in America and, you know, all over the world in the current manifestation of Israel, where it's the same type of thing. It's like, well, they, you know, threatened us, so we get to destroy them. And it's like, well, what are you guys doing? Clearly, if we treated Jews in the way that, you know, with the same standard that Jews seem to hold for other people, then we'd have to declare them our enemy and try to destroy them. And it's very unfortunate. It's maybe not a very healthy mindset, but it's our resistance to that mindset that's probably their greatest strength at this point. I think that makes, so hopefully you can tell what I'm saying here. But I mean, this is when you read Rise and Kill First, when you hear them talk, I mean, they have this idea of like, if there's any potential that they could ever do any damage to Israel, or if they criticize us, or if they try to charge us with war crimes, then we get to destroy them. It's like, is that really the standard you want to set? And if so, then you really can't be mad if other people treat you in exactly the same way. That's where a lot of the so-called persecution comes from. Thank you for the call, Buck. Let's go quickly to who's next here. Who's been on the longest? Cody in Tennessee, of course. Go to Cody in Tennessee. He wants to talk about the debate. Go ahead, Cody. You're on the air.
Yeah. Hey, Harrison. How you doing?
Good, thanks.
I just want to drop the Shilajit gummies. They're awesome. So is methylene blue and red. Couldn't do my job.
JonesStore.com. Go there today.
Yeah. You know it. Okay. I honestly think it's just to demoralize us, like, because you don't see anything getting done, like, with Fauci and with the debate. Like you said, it's just, like, kind of back and forth. I didn't see it. I mean, I believe your essence of it. So, like, it just seems to me they're trying to demoralize us so we don't go do stuff, like, in our own counties and states. Like, I mean, I love Japan too, and I love our fort, not Israel so much because they got us into this. But, you know, I think we should focus on us. Like, we need a top down style, like, just reassemblance of our whole governmental organization, because, I mean, that's the problem, isn't it? Top down.
100%. Well, and, you know, when it comes to, like, things around the world, like, I'm not necessarily an isolationist, but like, there are things going on that we are not addressing at all, that I would genuinely be, I'd be so happy if the American military was used to, like, destroy the Chinese fishing fleets. That'd be amazing. Like, that would be one war I'd actually be in favor of. If Donald Trump came out and said the Chinese are destroying the fisheries all around the world, they're draining the ocean of all of its life, and we're not going to stand it, and we're going to bomb the hell out of them, I'd be like, great. Great. We're actually saving the earth. We're actually addressing a literal threat to all of life in the ocean. These frickin' Chinese cities, floating cities, they call them. Thousands and thousands and thousands of boats parked just off the coast of places like Chile and Argentina, and just destroying all life in the ocean and then moving on to the next spot. Like, stuff like that, I would actually want to prioritize. I think we should actually concern ourselves with that. In the same way, I don't want to spend a single dollar to support Israel's territorial ambitions in Lebanon. Like, screw that. I'd rather give the money to Lebanon and let them have their way with Israel personally. But if you were telling me we're spending, you know, $100 billion because we're, you know, airdropping in paratroopers to protect the rhinos from going extinct, I'm in favor of that. I'm in favor of that. I would love to see America actually protect God's creation by preventing the Chinese from eating it all, or the Africans from slaughtering it all. I think America could do great things around the world. It's just everything we do is always terrible for everyone. Here, overseas, it's just endless stupidity, retardation, destruction, madness, chaos. And meanwhile, we're sitting here debating about Candace Owens.
Fight for our sovereignty, which to fight to protect, again, what God gave us, which, I mean, our health is one of the biggest things. We're all at this point middle-aged. We're trying to have families. And I think with the transhumanist agenda, there is a little bit of a psyop afoot.
Well, oh, I've said that. But the other day when I had you guys coming on, I said, we're doing something about what we can take control of. Mm. And then the last few years, Joe Rogan, one time at dinner, goes, about 3 years ago, goes, you're fat. Your own enemy. He does that to guests. It was like Theo Von, too. Get off that Prozac, you idiot. And people were mad at him. That's tough love Joe does. And he's there with Sean Johnson, the Navy SEAL guy that I'd known for years, wasn't really friends. Sean goes, fine, I'll train you. I'll meet you every morning. And I said, all right, let's do it. And then I lost like 70 pounds, and I kind of halfway cut back and gained back 10. But now I'm back to where I was. I'm going to go even lower. But the whole point is that Joe goes, you know, you're your own worst enemy. You think the globalists are going to kill you. You're killing yourself. And so that's where Masterpiece comes in. That's where doing all this comes in. I mean, this is real, folks. Methylene blue works. Bovine colostrum works. This, getmasterpiece.com. The Masterpiece is unbelievable.
We are at a crossroads with the survival of the human species. And the people that have all the resources and all have spelled that out very clearly to us. And the things that they are putting inside of our body to complete that mission. You got to get out. The fact of the matter is, zeolite, which is one of the main ingredients of Masterpiece, has been proven in all ways to remove every toxin that it's looked at grabbing. It performs, that's why it's called the Master Binder.
But yours is different.
It's completely different.
Because it doesn't just pull stuff, it brings in the key sea minerals.
Yes, absolutely. So any way that you would actually test Masterpiece out, which would be like its pH, its molecular composition, its molecular ratio, if it's isotonic and whatnot, it is identical to blood plasma. You're talking about marine plasma, sea plasma, minerals. It is the same molecular composition of as your blood profile. And so why does that matter? Blood is life. When you are grabbing the problem with our bodies, with the toxins in there, which is disrupting how our bodies perform on every level, it's literally made our bodies mineral deficient. Toxins take the place of minerals. So when the Masterpiece is carrying in minerals, when it takes a toxin, it's giving the perfect minerals right there at that time. That's why everyone that looks at the testing, whether it's our hair tissue mineral analysis practitioners, our blood testers, which we've done three different independent third-party labs doing different blood testing, they've never seen results like
this. Yeah, so regular zeolite just pulls out bad stuff. It doesn't replace it. This is zeolite with a good thing, pulls out bad, it goes bloop, good.
Yeah. Our bodies are magical if you get the poisons out.
Reality starts here. AlexJonesLive.com. Share the link. Spread the word.
New grape flavor, bovine colostrum gummies. Yeah, baby. Yeah, these are the best. Support your gut with these grape gummies. Get yours now.
All-new Groovy Grape Bovine Colostrum Gummies have arrived. They're sweet, they're groovy, and they're ready to roll. Dope us out. Get yours today. Oh, yeah, baby.
The globalists are poisoning your family. Fight back with superfood gummies, vitamins, powerhouse probiotics, plus an organic fruit and veggie blast. For the resistance, get them now. Now that's how you stick it to the globalists. Tastes like pure victory, baby. The AlexJonesStore.com.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room. Remember, the easiest way to support us is simply by sharing the content. Of course, you can follow me at Harrison H. Smith on X. I routinely tweet out all the clips from the show. If you can spread those around, download them yourself, upload them yourself. Everything's free to air, of course. It's easy and free to share our content and help us get this information out there, since that's what it's all about. Now, we covered earlier this week the very suspicious connection between the flock camera surveillance array and a company called Toka, T-O-K-A. And it was discovered that Andreessen Horowitz, it was an investor in both of these companies, and their connection is highly suspicious because one of the things that this company Toka provides is the ability to alter security camera footage. So if you have Flock, which is supposed to be this surveillance apparatus controlled by and working for our law enforcement, but they also have access to this company that can come up with AI video and replace it in real time, yeah, that's a bit of an issue. And so people started looking into this Toka company, and actually Whitney Webb had done a lot of investigation and reporting on this all the way back in 2021. This is from unlimitedhangout.com. That's Whitney Webb's Substack from July of 2021. Meet Toka, the most dangerous Israeli spy firm you've never heard of. Now, this happened in the aftermath of an investigation into Israeli intelligence unit 8200 using the Pegasus system to spy on individuals around the world. While the NSO group has become infamous, other Israeli companies with even deeper ties to Israelis' intelligence apparatus have been selling software that not only provides the exact same services to governments and intelligence agencies as Pegasus, but purports to go even further. Originally founded by former Israeli Prime Minister and Jeffrey Epstein associate Ehud Barak, one of these companies' wares are being used by countries around the world, including in developing countries, with direct facilitation of global institutions like the Inter-American Development Bank and the World Bank. In addition, the software was only made available to governments that are quote-unquote trusted by Israel's government, which, quote, works closely with the company. Despite the fact this firm has been around since 2018 and was covered in detail by Whitney Webb in 2020, no mainstream outlet, including those who have extensively covered the NSO group, have bothered to examine the implications of this story. So they say it's worse than Pegasus. Toka was launched in 2018 with the explicit purpose of selling a, quote, tailored ecosystem of cyber capabilities and software products for governmental, law enforcement, and security agencies. According to a profile of the company published in Forbes shortly after it launched, Toka advertised itself as a, quote, one-stop hacking shop for governments that require extra capability to fight terrorists and other threats to national security in the digital domain. Toka launched with plans to, quote, provide spy tools for whatever device its clients require, including not only smartphones, but special focus on the so-called Internet of Things. Per the company, this includes devices like Amazon Echo, Google Nest connected home products, as well as connected fridges, thermostats, and alarms. Exploits in these products discovered by Toka, the company said at the time, would not be disclosed to vendors, meaning those flaws would continue to remain vulnerable to any hacker, whether a client of Toka or not. So basically, it allows them to obtain targeted intelligence, conduct forensic investigations, as well as covert operations. Toka offers governments its cyber designer service, which provides agencies with a full spectrum of strategies, customized projects, and technologies needed to keep critical infrastructure, the digital landscape, and government institutions secure and durable. The problem is not only can it easily be abused and used to hack devices for nefarious purposes, but it is absolutely inextricable and practically one thing with the Israeli government. Intelligence agencies use these tools for purposes of obtaining blackmail. The use of blackmail by Israeli security agencies against civilian Palestinians to attempt to weaken Palestinian society and for political persecution is well documented. Toka has been described by market analysts as an offensive security company. Although the company's leadership rejected this characterization, the company's co-founder and current CEO, Yaron Rosen, asserted that, as opposed to purely offensive, the company's operations are something in the middle, which he classifies as bridging cyber defense and offensive cyber capabilities, e.g. hacking. The company's activities are concerning in light of the fact that Toka has directly partnered with Israel's Ministry of Defense and other Israeli intelligence and security agencies since its founding. The company works closely with these government agencies, according to an Israeli Ministry of Defense website. This collaboration, per Toka, is meant to enhance their products. Toka's direct IDF links are in contrast to the NSO group, a company that does not maintain overt ties with the Israeli security state. But Toka's direct collaboration with Israel's government is also made clear through its claims that it sells its products and offers its services only to quote-unquote trusted governments, law enforcement agencies, and intelligence agencies. Toka's Rosen has stated that Russia, China, and other enemy countries would never be customers of the country. of the company. In other words, only countries aligned with Israeli policy goals, particularly in occupied Palestine, are permitted to be customers and gave access to this trove of powerful hacking tools. This is consistent with Israeli government efforts to leverage Israel's high-tech sector as a means of countering the boycott, divest, and sanction movement globally. So again, this was all the way back in 2021. Toka's just hit the headlines again because of the relationship between some of its investors who also invest in Flock. The thing is, this is clearly all part of the same movement, right? We just had David Barnea put as head of a company very similar to Toka, very similar to Palantir, which is using hundreds of millions of dollars to buy up auxiliary AI companies to basically be the main umbrella corporation that has in its purview all these various AI warfighting platforms, including hacking and digital attacks, but also fighting robots and, you know, battlefield coordination and strategy. And of course, it's being run by the ex-head of Mossad. And of course, you have all of these Israel-loyal people, whether it's Larry Ellison or Alex Carr, Palantir and Oracle, and all of these things have AI warfighting powers. And basically, Israel decided, we're going to send people into America to take control of the big tech companies, to feed us information, to more consolidate our control over America. I mean, it's a very public and obvious plan they're carrying out, design they're carrying out. The company, Toka, was founded by Ehud Barak, Alon Kantor, Kafir Waldman, and a retired IDF Brigadier General Yaron Rosen. Rosen, the firm's founding CEO and now co-CEO, is the former chief of the IDF's cyber staff, where he was the, quote, lead architect of all IDF cyber activities, including those executed by Israeli Military Intelligence Unit 8200. Alon Kantor is the former vice president of business development for Checkpoint Software, a software and hardware company founded by Unit 8200 veterans. Kafir Waldman is the former CEO of GoArc and former director of engineering at technology giant Cisco. Cisco is a leader in the field of Internet of Things devices and IoT cybersecurity, while GoArc focuses on appliances for mobile devices. As previously mentioned, Toka hacks not only mobile devices, but also has a special focus on hacking IoT devices. So what does it mean when Cisco and Palantir and, you know, Larry Ellison, all these, Apple as well, like, what happens when every big tech company is owned by an Israeli, and many of them, practically most of them, are owned by people with not just connections to Israeli intelligence, but like long careers in Israeli intelligence? Of course, they put an Israeli government operative, the Minister of Internal Affairs or whatever it was, at the head of the oversight board on Facebook. You basically have this, you know, colonization project where the people at the top of all these companies are all literally agents of Israeli intelligence. And you never stop being an intelligent agent. It's like the mafia. Like, once you're read in, once you get the secret data, like, you're in. And you either are in or you die. You don't leave. You don't retire. You don't just hang up your hat and say goodnight. You're always in it. You're always an asset. You're always working for them. Because that's just the way that it works. And also, you know, Mossad, I'm not sure they've ever actually been officially codified into, you know, the Israeli government. You know, when Mossad first started for years, I've covered this on the show before, like, you weren't allowed to say the words Shin Bet or Mossad. It was illegal in Israel to say the words Shin Bet or Mossad for the first, like, 40 years until, like, the late 60s when they finally admitted these things existed. So if you can't even mention them, then they certainly aren't actually established in the official constitution or the official government project. So, like, in America, somebody put forward a bill. There's a congressman or a senator put forward a bill saying, we think America should create the CIA, the Central Intelligence Agency. Here's what we think it should do. Here's how we think it should be funded. Here's the controls that we have for it. And then we passed that act and the CIA became a thing. In Israel, there was never a bill put forward. There was never an official establishment of Mossad or any of these things. So there's no oversight. There was no civilian oversight, let alone political oversight. It's just a group of murderers who claim to be an intelligence agency. I know this sounds crazy, but like that's actually how Mossad was founded. And for the first several decades of its operation, it had no official designation, no official right to do what they're doing. They're just sort of doing it. It's a mafia. It's basically a mafia, and it continues to this day, more or less in that regard. Only now they are running big tech companies all over America. And of course, they, you know, Israel is very aggressively trying to insinuate their technological prowess into national security all over the world. We covered this, and I first really found out about it when Tom Alexandrovich was arrested in Vegas for trying to meet an underage girl. And looking up who Tom Alexandrovich is, he was the head of the Israel Golden Dome program, where they were and are basically providing national cybersecurity for the Five Eyes and Germany and all these other. So all of our cybersecurity for all of our countries is basically being offshored to Israel. They're managing it. And by the way, they hate and are trying to destroy us. But they're in charge of our security, and they have access to all of the data of every big tech companies, because the people that run it are, in fact, Mossad agents, fully fledged. And again, you hear the way they talk, and it's not the type of people you would want anywhere near the levers of power, let alone having this inordinate and practically ubiquitous control over all of our tech. And I just got a few pages in. I do encourage you to go read this article at Ultimate Unlimited Hangout, rather, by Whitney Webb. But with that, we go back out to your phone calls. Let's go to Rip in Texas. It says he's black-pilled. Let's go, Rip, you're on the air.
Hey, Harrison. Thanks for taking my call. And first off, I just wanted to lead with an apology to Alex Jones. On, I think it was Monday or Tuesday, he was talking about how bigly he was complaining about how much, how you guys are losing money on this stuff. Well, I'm a VIP. I buy a bunch of stuff from you guys, and I cashed out about $400 worth of free credits on Monday or Tuesday this last week. And then he comes on air and, hey, we're losing money. So I kind of feel responsible for that.
Hey, you earned it, Rip. Hey, you earn credits. You spend them, brother. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, but I wanted to lead off also with a couple of the other callers. Back in 1991, I was in college at Texas A&M, and I was a philosophy student and an economics student. I took these theories of Paul Ehrlich and the population bomb, where, you know, they're trying to limit population growth, et cetera, how, you know, and I posited the depletion rates, how that could be used for Marxism. And so that was kind of the forerunner of all of the big climate change philosophy, yep, et cetera, and that since died. But I fused those two theories together, and I wrote one paper for both my economic resource scarcity class and my Marxism class. And I combined them together, and my professors looked at me like I was crazy. Where'd you come up with this? Well, the next year, the UN passed Agenda 2030. And meanwhile, I'm just like, I'm awake, and I'm just kind of looking at it going, everybody around me was dead asleep. Mm. Nobody did it. And so it's for that one caller, don't get blackpilled. Just realize that most people, I would say most, I would categorize them the unvaxxed NPCs. The vax people are the NPCs. There's a few of them that are waking up, but there's basically about 20% of us that are thoroughly awake. So don't get disheartened. Realize you're not alone, but most people around you are completely clueless. Mm-hmm. And the other point I wanted to make, the thing about the Masonic Lodge, and Alex kind of went on a tangent this week about it, was he said it's, you know, it's Satanism, et cetera. After I got out of college, I started studying all that stuff that Alex has studied, the Lesser Keys of Solomon, Aleister Crowley, the Kabbalah Unveiled. I started positing all those theories, and one point in those Aleister Crowley books was you need to become a Master Mason. And so I had a vouch who was the nephew of Huey Long, the governor. My family's been in this country for 400 years or so.
Yeah.
I come from a long, distinguished line of oppressors. And I got in the Masonic Lodge, and I realized that it's all occult. Everything in there, the symbolism, all of it is all occult. I don't associate with it anymore, but there is no such thing as a female Mason. They are members of the Eastern Star, and yes, there is a Masonic contingency for the women, but it has nothing to do with it. And part of the rituals in the Masonic Lodge is they break you down to basically so they can, I guess the analogy would be that they're breaking you down to mold you exactly the way they want you to be. And I'm sitting in there in the Masonic Lodge, and it's FBI agents, DEA, all of these people, and they're looking at me because, like, I have long hair. I had a ponytail. They're like, who the hell is this guy? But I was just in there to see, look under the hood to see what they were doing. And it is true. They control everything. They're all associated together. It's all part of the Zionist lobby. And so I'm actually at Home Depot. And you went on a tangent about flock cameras, and the only flock cameras in my area are at Home Depot. So I'm here to wrap up my survival supplies to survive the next apocalypse. But don't get disheartened. There are about 20% of us, and a few of us are building our little roundabouts to be the warlords in our area. Mm-hmm. So anyway, God bless you, and your products are wonderful. I'm 57. It makes me feel 35. So I mean, the Shield Jet, all of it. I'm going to plug you top to bottom, and listeners, buy their stuff.
Thank you very much. That was a great call. I was expecting a black-pilled call. That was a very white-pilled call, though. I really appreciate that. And I can only imagine, you know, you think it's frustrating being awake now. Imagine being awake in 1991, folks. Imagine the torture that must have been. That man's had to wait 36 years just for people to catch up to where he was back then. So we are growing. I mean, our ranks are growing. The awakening is happening. I mean, really, the things we're talking about now are like speed bumps, but the fact is we only notice them because we're going so fast. Like the fact that we're sort of upset or frustrated that people are getting distracted by these claims that don't have proof. It's like, hey, at least people are questioning things. At least people are looking at things under the hood and inspecting it, not just taking the official story for granted. So, you know, as far as we have to go, we have come a great, great distance, together, right? You and us and myself and Alex Jones and all of us, we have Alex Jones in particular. I mean, it's like a little tugboat pulled this, you know, cruise ship behind us slowly but surely, turned it around and got it going in the right direction. We just need to make sure we stay on course. So thank you very much for that call, and thank you for your support. Please do support us at thealexjonesstore.com. The products really are good, and you hear people rage about them for that reason. Let's go now to John in Missouri, I believe this is. Go ahead, John, you're on the air.
Hi, Harrison.
Howdy.
I absolutely love your show.
Thank you.
The first thing I have to say is my 13-year-old daughter comes to me and says, Dad, I need more methylene blue. I need more CMOS. And I love that she gets the benefit, and she doesn't even understand how good it is.
Fantastic.
So I used to have to go home at night, because way back in the day, what you're talking about, early 90s, I had to go home and listen to shortwave at night after I got home from work to listen. It wasn't even InfoWars yet.
Right.
But I've been listening for that long, and I appreciate the fact my children and grandchildren are not vaccinated because of information that I got from alternative sources like InfoWars, like Mike Adams, and like Jerry Tenpenny, and all these people. I used to listen on live, and it's shocking that what that gentleman before me just said. People don't have a clue, but I've had a clue for a long time, and it's been a benefit to my entire family, and I appreciate you. I miss Chase. Man, that guy could run off a spiel. He wasn't playing. It was off the top of his head. He was awesome.
He's a character, man.
And so is Alex.
I miss Chase as well. You know, we got to hang out over the weekend. He was in the debates that we did over the weekend that should be coming out later this month and into October, or September, I guess. It's the next month, but they'll be released periodically until October. And Chase is on there, and he's in his Chase form. He was cracking everybody up. It was very fun. And you know, I saw somebody on X who was trying to basically he was listing all the people that have been at InfoWars before, were at InfoWars at one point, and was basically like, you know, look at all these people that have left. And it's like, well, first of all, each one's in particular, and some of them left for good reasons, some of them for bad reasons, some were fired, some were quit. It's, you know, all totally different. You can't, you know, frame them all as like leaving in fours and how that's just not true. But the fact is, all you're really pointing out is the number of incredible talents that have come through at InfoWars and usually got their start at InfoWars. I mean, hell, Candace Owens used to only come on InfoWars. We were the only ones that had her on until she, you know, got her blow up and, you know, went on to Daily Wire or whatever. But I would, you know, I would tag her in the InfoWars column of just like people who got their start at InfoWars. It's Savannah Hernandez. It's obviously Owen Schroyer. It's David Nye. Like all these people. Yeah, we were hanging out. Chase Geyser. I mean, the amount of talent that's come through the Alex Jones Network, InfoWars, is truly staggering and humbling. When you know how many incredible people have not just, you know, been affected and or worked for InfoWars, but, you know, I pointed out, look at the most powerful voices in American media today. And at least two of them credit their awakening directly to Alex Jones. Tucker Carlson and Joe Rogan are two of the biggest voices in American politics, certainly the biggest voices on the American right. Both of them were directly woken up by Alex Jones himself. Like, they would not be on the path that they're on without Alex Jones. They would not be saying the things that they're saying or taking the trajectory that they did without Alex Jones there waking them up to the reality and really setting. I mean, he is the Yoda, right? He is the Obi-Wan Kenobi of this whole movement. It's Alex Jones at the end of the day, which is why it's such a privilege and a humbling act to even be on this truly legendary platform. Thank you so much for your support, John, and God bless your family. Keep them healthy for us. We got time for one more call. We'll go to Pedro in California. Has some solutions for us. We'd love to hear him. Go ahead, Pedro. Thank you for holding.
Oh, hey, how you doing, Harrison? This is Pedro from Paradise, a.k.a. Pillow Talk Pete. How you doing, man? I just wanted to say one thing. I said, you know what? We all appreciate you so very much because, you know, your job is to look into the toilet every day and decide which one's got to go. You know, so thank you. We just want to say thank you for that. Yeah, and you know what? I called last year to talk with Chase, and I told Chase, I said, Chase, I got all the supplements in my cupboard, and I ran through them. It was funny, and I got the methylene blue, and I said, Chase, that don't work. And he laughed, and we laughed, and, you know, sometimes this stuff doesn't hit right away, but what I wanted to say was it was incredible. Probably in, let's see, I talked to him in August, and when in October or November, I had this planter's wart on my fingertip, and I saw it go away in a period of 30 days. And I had that planter's wart for almost 3 years, and I remember you saying something that it helped eczema. So I've been trying to tell people. Sometimes I tell people about Alex Jones, and they don't want to hear it, but when you can come at them, like, you guys sell some of the best stuff on earth, hands down. And I just want to say thank you, thank you, thank you.
Amen. But, wow, what a great, I'm sorry, we got to end the show. What a great call to end on. That was fantastic. I wish I'd gone to you earlier, Pedro. You got to call back in. I want to talk to you more. So appreciate the calls, everybody, for calling in and joining us. We'll see you back on Monday. Go to thealexjonesstore.com to support us and join the ranks. Join the ranks.
Folks, I'm Dr. Bigley. Today's presentation will be about methylene blue and you.
Dr. Bigley, what does methylene blue do?
Great question, Billy. It has to do with your mitochondria, the powerhouse of your cells. Let's bring out the mitochondria now!
Right.
As I was saying, methylene blue supercharges your mitochondria, which does wonders for your mental clarity, stamina, and overall pep. Just look at him go!
Gee, Dr. Bigley, he must have drank a lot of methylene blue. He was bouncing off the walls.
Right you are, Billy. He sure drank a lot. Let's continue, shall we?
Billy, did you know that methylene blue can cure communism?
No, sir. Can I see?
Why, certainly, Billy. Take a look over there.
Behold, Ivan, a Ruski doggedly determined to undermine our way of life.
Careful, Billy. He bites. Oh. Look. Vodka. Potato hooch.
Watch. The communism is slowly leaving his body.
Wow. The methylene blue cured the red right out of him.
So, how do you feel?
Gee, Doc. I don't know what got into me. I feel like $1 million now. Say, where can I get some more of that blue stuff in case I become retarded again?
You can find it on the alexjonesstore.com.
What does .com mean?
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.